It's time for Twink This Week at Google. Jeff Jarvis is here. Stacey Higginbotham is back. And, of course, item number one on the agenda, the Google memo. We're going to try to break it down in a way that's, you know, kind of makes sense of everything and explains what happened and why. And Stacey, of course, will have, I promise you, the final word on this one. We'll also be talking about changes at T-Mobile, the next iPhone, and why I think I might be using that next time, and a whole lot more. This Week at Google, coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 417, recorded Wednesday, August 9th, 2017. Fire and Furry. This Week in Google is brought to you by Captera. Captera is a free and easy-to-use software comparison site with over 400 categories of business software to choose from and thousands of reviews from actual software users like you. Visit Captera.com/twig today. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news, and there is a considerable amount of news from Google and Facebook and Twitter and the Googleverse and what's going on in media. And Jeff Jarvis and Stacey Higginbotham are here. Jeff is, of course, the professor of journalism, the distinguished eminence grise of this show from the City University of New York, CUNY.
Boring guy. What are you saying is the boring guy?
The boring guy. He's the pontificator. Buzz Machine. No, that's my job. Buzzmachine.com is his blog. He's in Chicago. What are you in Chicago for today?
The I don't even know what it stands for, AEJMC, which is the Society of somehow of Journalism and Mass Communications Professors.
Oh, neat.
It's your
trade group, your union.
I was sitting in these panels and things, and inside I was screaming. And I decided I wasn't going to be an ass. Well, yeah, they're talking naively about business. They're talking plus you'd think I'm going to get in such trouble. You would think the professors would be really good at giving presentations because they're supposed to do it with classes. No. So it's just naive and thin.
Anybody who's gone to college knows that professors are some of the most can be, and my dad's one, and I'm like, good friend Jeff here is one, can be the most boring people on the face of the planet.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I'm screaming. I'm here because I need to be here,
but
I'm
screaming. They're not performers. How's the carnage, by the way? Is the carnage okay in Chicago today?
Oh, I'm in privileged north of the river.
Oh, okay.
So.
No carnage in your neck of the woods?
No.
All right. Well, if you need any rage and fire and fury, we got it.
Fine. You saw the great headline?
No.
There was a huge headline in a newspaper. And it was why copywriters should exist, because the headline was Fire and Furry.
Fire and Furry? Yeah, two R's.
It was Pup Wars of Cats Aflame.
We're gonna send some furries your way. Also with us, Stacey Higginbotham. She is at the IoT Podcast and is, I'm very proud to say, the number 12th most influential tech journalist in the world.
Yowza.
What?
Yowza.
Who? 12th. A 12th in the world, no. Just a lot of journalists follow me on Twitter, which I'm so sad for them.
This is a study. Study.
Or is this a different study?
Where
it's a Twitter map.
It's a Twitter map by an analyst at Apollo 100, I think. He's done this a couple of years in a row. The 100 most influential tech people on Twitter or something like that. And you, I was very proud to see. Of all the people we have on this show, you are number one.
There we go.
Yep. And Jeff and I'm on the list. Jeff isn't. Most of our hosts are lower than you.
Well, Jeff isn't a journalist quite.
Yeah, you're right.
He teaches journalism.
I don't know.
He's not a tech journalist.
I don't know how I should take that.
Well, no, I didn't want to insult. I was trying not to, but I'm like, I don't think of you. You don't work at a magazine in that sense. That's all I'm saying. I guess I don't work at a magazine either. Never mind. You know what I'm saying. I'm not trying to insult you.
Good. Get her
I'm
to
enjoy watching both of you dig holes. This
get,
is good.
Get her to dig.
Yeah, I was like, here I go.
Get her to dig more holes. I like it.
It's usually my turn to dig holes.
I like it. Well, as long as we're talking about it, let me pull up the article. Number one, Kara Swisher, which I think is, you know, that's fair.
Totally fair.
Yeah. This is from Apollo Research. It's the top 30 technology writers, followed by most other U.S. tech writers, Rich Levin. And they made a tag cloud. And your name is right there. Look at that. Right above Mike Isaac, there's Stacey Higginbotham. Big name in the tag cloud.
I was going to say, I think I'm a big name in the tag cloud. I'll remember that. But I think it's just because my name is so long.
I'm a little name.
It is an advantage.
No, look at my name way down there. I'm a little tiny little name under Lauren
Leo.
Joanna is on there. Joanna Stern, who I adore, is on there twice.
She's on there twice.
And I'm trying to figure out why.
Well, that's
she's right under Sam Biddle and then vertical next to Quentin Hardy and Brian Chin. Quentin isn't even a journalist anymore.
Well, Scoble's on this list too, but I'm just thrilled that you're number eight.
I got everywhere.
You are okay. First of all, you're number eight, and more importantly, you're
Mary Jo Foley's number 12.
Yeah, Mary Jo Foley's in there too. You're the highest non-affiliated, you know, independent in here. Everybody else is with a big publication.
Oh, that's really a big point. Yeah.
So Swisher, Mike Isaac, who is like with a bullet, he was like number 100 last year because he's at the New York Times and does great stuff. We like his stuff. Farhan Manjoo, Walt Mossberg. I think this is Harry McCracken, more a testament to people who are active on Twitter and post great stuff on Twitter so that other tech journalists follow them on Twitter. That's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
I think it's true.
Yeah. Lots of great people on here. And I'm proud to work with many of them. Normally I'm on lists of weird people.
I don't know these.
I had to actually give them my email address and download they only published the first 30 and I'm not on it. To download the other 100 just to see if I was anywhere on there. And I'm number.
That's like being in Who's Who.
It is terrible. I get to give up information. I'm number 63 and I'm very proud of that. I hope someday I'm tweeting more just to get up there with you, Stacey. I want to be up in the.
I think it's because you don't like Twitter. I think that's always going to hold you back, man.
I have completely revamped my Twitter strategy in response to this study.
Okay. Are you tweeting about your dog?
No.
That really works for me.
See, because I thought if you tweeted a lot about tech and tech stories that you'd get more followers.
See, I tweet about my dog and I tweet about really esoteric studies from crazy places. And then I also tweet about my gadget experiences.
I consider this little discussion here our amuse-bouche.
There we go.
the little hors d'oeuvre.
It's light and not filling.
The little hors d'oeuvre they give you at fancy French restaurants to prepare you for the big course to come.
Goose liver on toast.
I've been trying to avoid. I've been putting off the big story because I don't even want to talk about it, but I guess we have to. You all probably, if you follow tech news, know that last week, a Googler, at the time unnamed Googler, posted on an internal board a memo about why he felt Google. Now I'm going to try to phrase this in a neutral way. Why he felt that Google was barking down the wrong path with its diversity initiatives and was perhaps too politically correct about it to do a good job. He wasn't anti-diversity. He said right up front, "I'm not against diversity. I'm not against an attempt to make the workplace more diverse, but we have to understand the difference between men and women." And I think a lot of people read it and took it as women are not suited for tech jobs. That, of course, got an immediate response, loud, vociferous response. Gizmodo somehow got the actual memo and published it. Yonatan Zunger, former senior engineer.
Recently former.
Yeah, we didn't even know he wasn't there until he wrote this piece and said,
brilliant guy.
I could talk now because I'm not there anymore, so I can talk in a way I wouldn't. Completely dismissed, A, the factual material in the memo, and B, said the guy should be fired because this is destructive to Google. The VP Diversity at Google put out initially a memo saying, you know, this is unacceptable. And Sundar Pichai, apparently the CEO of Google, came back from a family holiday to address the issue, and they ended up firing the person who wrote the memo. It's a 10-page screed, at which point Julian Assange immediately offered him a job at WikiLeaks. saying he was a victim of the politically correct culture of the United States. Have I summarized that? I think that's pretty much where we stand today. There have been articles since both in his favor and against him. I'm not going
to
use
his name.
I think
to describe this as neutral is like you cannot describe what he did as neutral in a neutral fashion, because what he did was basically take a position which, fine, let's talk about Google's diversity efforts, but the way he decided to do the conversation was by saying, it was the equivalent of me walking into a place and saying, hey, let's talk about crime statistics, and then saying something terrible about Black people and accusing all of them of being a problem or not up to white people crime standards or something equally horrifying. So to even describe this in neutral terms, I think gives it way more credit than it should even get. This is a terrible piece of writing in terms of just spewing hate in points that are directly from men's rights activists. But two, doing it in such a way that if any reasonable person had decided to take issue with the company's policy by doing it like this, they should be fired. This is not a reasonable thing to do, because anyone reading that memo is going to be like, holy cow, I work with a guy who's a total kind of misogynistic jerk. I would say bigger, worse words, but I won't. I get that people are like, oh, let's argue the science. I'm like, screw the science. He is wrong. He doesn't address all of the issues behind the science. And B, the way he did this was like dropping a bomb in his workplace. And his colleagues are going to have to clean that up.
I'm not sure. What I don't know, maybe you do, but I don't know. He posted it, we're told, on a meme board, an internal board, and then an internal equivalent of Google+. I don't know. I don't know if this was sent to every single person at the company or it was posted in a discussion group for this. Yeah, everybody could see it, I gather, but okay. I don't know even. And
if he sent it to 10 people, one of them is a woman, then there's a hostile workplace. So, and if they're all men, then they're kind of conspirators. It doesn't matter how many in Google.
Okay.
And think about when Facebook posted their wall where they had their wall where employees could write stuff. And then suddenly when Zuck had to come down and say, hey, guys, you cannot, I think, was it White Lives Also Matter? Or someone took a stance and wrote on the wall.
Oh, I forgot that.
He is a CEO. He had a responsibility to come in and say, guys, that is not our culture. That is not okay.
Right. That's kind of what Google did. And of course, we should stipulate immediately that Google, as a private company, has the right to fire the person or the right to discipline the person, has the right to react any way it chooses. There's no free speech in the workplace in that sense.
Right.
So he's not, you know, what he wrote was not protected because he published it on a company board. So I don't think anybody would dispute that much of what he said was hurtful and inaccurate about women, saying things like women have a higher tendency to anxiety. So if you're going to have them in a tech job, you should have them in a place where it's less anxious. Women are extroverted. Men are introverted. That's blatant, obviously not generally is it true. Neuroticism, higher anxiety, lower stress tolerance. This may contribute to the higher levels of anxiety. I don't want to get Stacey upset. So
he seen a Woody Allen movie? I know. That man's entire oom?
Well, okay. So a couple of things. First of all, and he even says this. These are generalities. But you're generalizing about a gender, just like generalizing about a race is offensive to people.
But Stacey's onto something else here, which is really important, Leo, which is I could barely get through the damn thing because it was so badly written.
Yeah, I couldn't read the whole thing either. I tried.
So that's part of the case going on here. Yeah. Whether it's political or technology, the Venn diagram we're getting here of the so-called men's rights movement, which is, as a man, I will say, is BS. We've had plenty of rights for plenty of time, and it's a reaction to feminism. It's a reaction to a perceived loss of power. It's a reaction to all kinds of things. like nationalism, like racism, you know, misogyny fits in there. And so there's a set of dog whistles. There's a set of ways to talk. And, you know, when I criticized it, then boom, I got it on Twitter like that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so what's disturbing to me is, I mean, so that exists and that has a voice now because social enables it. Enables lots of things, good and bad. Okay with that.
I think there's also I think we could clearly say there's a tenor in this country right now to tolerate speech that we would not have tolerated 10 years ago.
Well, that goes that itself is an argument, right? Because if you go to NRO, National Review, and others, they're decrying his firing as a lack of free speech and as political correctness. But the point I'm trying to make here for the show that's relevant, so don't send me your emails. I'm being relevant.
Oh, send them emails anyway. You think that's going to stop them?
What disturbs me is the connection of the technology industry, because it's not gender diverse, and the so-called men's rights movement and the misogyny that is inherent in that, and how they come together, and the whole gamer gator world around technology and men, and technology not being open to, respectful of women. That's a huge cultural problem, not just for the individual companies. But I don't think you can take this one guy, as The Atlantic did, and said, well, this shows the horrible core of Google and the horrible core of technology.
I want to propose something. I was going to go, because first of all, if you just go to the end of his memo and look at his suggestions, I think we can clearly throw out the bogus sociological crap he's throwing in there. Although people with some expertise in the area are defending him.
No, there are people with expertise defending him. There are also people with expertise saying he's full of crap.
So
that's why we're throwing that out.
There's some debate about it, but we're just going to throw that out.
I'm not even going to call
it. He says, my larger point is we have an intolerance for ideas and evidence that don't fit a certain ideology. Would you agree with that?
No, because he's using my ideas and freedom of expression to espouse stereotypes, bigoted thinking.
Well, he then says, I'm not saying we should restrict people to certain gender roles. I'm advocating for quite the opposite. I couldn't disagree with this line. Treat people as individuals, not as just another member of their group. Tribalism.
That's fine. But he, in this memo, lumped women under an entire group who's bad at engineering. So I love the fact that he's like, oh, yeah, let's all be individuals.
But let's not do that. Women are
extroverted, neurotic.
So here's what I'm going to propose. So maybe we'll diffuse this a little bit. Technology and frankly, business in general, but technology particularly has been a male playing field for so long that we have a certain picture of it. And people who have grown up in the industry have a picture of how it looks, how the workplace looks, how the product that we create looks. On Windows Weekly, I said it's like we for years have been operating with a black screen and white text. You know, just, it's been in black and white. And then all of a sudden, people are saying, no, but we want to make it a rainbow. We want to include everybody. We want technology to reflect all the people in the world, not just this white, you know, short sleeve pocket protector, skinny black tie, nerd glasses.
Speaking of stereotyping, group. But keep going.
Well, but it, you know, that's the IBM thing, you know, and I think what we're saying is it should be in rainbows, and it's upsetting to people who say, but no, but tech is this way. And I think that this is what this guy really at
so
bottom
is
saying.
Wrong. On this, I'm just going to.
But I feel like what he's saying is, he doesn't know it, but what he's saying is, this is how it looks, this is how it should look, this is how it's always looked, this is how it feels good and right to me.
This is how I don't want to change.
And what we're saying to him is, I understand. What I would say is, I understand why you'd feel that way, but it could be so much more, and there's so much more opportunity with diversity, not just gender diversity, but racial diversity, national origin, that the melting pot is a melting pot of many colors. It could be so much more interesting. Yes, it doesn't look like what it used to look like. That's upsetting to people. But the opportunity is so much better that it's worth opening up your mind to that idea.
This is a discreet against change and diversity. Diversity is
that's
change.
That's what I think this is.
Discreet against diversity and
this
change.
This is as all conservatism is ultimately saying, I don't want it to change.
Yeah, because I'm in power
now. Did you see, I don't know if you guys read what I wrote, but I wrote something on this that was really about it, speaking to those people who don't want the world to change. Unfortunately, the world needs to change, and tech especially.
I agree.
Because if you don't have... Yotan actually did a great job. If you don't have that empathy, if you don't have that understanding of your consumer as tech becomes less about computing and more infiltrated into everything, you're going to build crappy products.
Right.
And exactly. Google has shown us
and
how...
Furthermore, you're going to perpetuate the monoculture because the only people who be attracted to the products you build are going to be the people, you know, like you. So you create a monoculture. That's not a good
tech
thing.
Tech does this
and
all
that's
the
what
time.
We've been doing. That's exactly
tech
right.
Does it with young people, teenagers. Yeah. It does it against like, oh, I don't want to build smartphones for old people. You know, meanwhile, Jitterbug's over there doing a successful business. I mean, there's look at venture capital and the things they invest in. So
Stacy's article is on Medium, by the way, not on her blog, Stacy IIMZ.
And put that on the rundown so I could see it ahead.
Don't
apologize. I'm just so I can make sure I see it. But I just looked for it, your Twitter feed, and I couldn't stop laughing about your dog at the
There's
habanero.
There's a lot of dog stuff.
There is. That was a traumatic moment this afternoon for people who want to know. I dropped some habanero raspberry jam on the floor. My dog swooped in.
Oh,
she licked it up.
No,
and she actually yelped, and then she started pawing at her nose, and I was the bad guy.
So I want to defend myself. Now. I didn't read this ahead of time, but we're in agreement on this. No. Not the raspberry habanero sauce. We're in agreement on this. You say the world has revolved around white men's needs for so long that as their parents began to set limits, they rebel and claim that's not fair.
Yeah.
That's not fair. It's not right. And I think you're exactly right. That's what's happening is this reflexive, no, we don't want it to change.
Exactly.
Right. But it's not my job. And this is the angry Stacy. It is not my job to hold this dude's hand and to teach him all of this. And a lot of that, I'll call it emotional labor. I feel kind of cliche saying that is... Women have to do that. We have to say, oh, engineering guy, here's why it matters that you need to care about other people. Or, oh, you weird, introverted, creepy guy, I'll work around your schedule. But screw
well,
that.
You don't have to do it. And I understand why you're angry. And as anybody who's been oppressed would naturally say, well, I'm not going to help the oppressor get over their misguided notions. But well, I will say, as a fellow oppressor, I would like to do that because somebody's going to have to do this. Somebody's going to have to drag, that's the wrong phrase, coerce, cajole, encourage this patriarchy to start to be inclusive. We have to figure out a way to do it that works.
That's why I wrote that article.
I don't understand you. I don't at all fault you for being pissed off and not wanting to do that. It isn't your job. But I will take that job on as a member of the patriarchy because it's – you're right. It's better for everyone. We just have to get over our like, but I like it when I'm, you know, in charge.
that's exactly what's happening all around, right? Yes. Disruption is bringing a react. We're seeing equal and opposite reaction happening. Challenge to nation brings nationalism. Challenge to the white majority brings white nationalism. Challenge to male hegemony brings the so-called men's right movement. But it's a little more complex than that. I recommend once again the Data and Society report about media manipulation that came out a few weeks ago. It goes into great detail. Well, not great detail. It goes into a lot of things. But it's a very good explainer about the backwards world of this kind of manipulation, of the dog whistles, that if you think something's bad or wrong, then, oh, we're just lulls. We're just trying to show something. We're just trying to get a discussion. It's all we're trying to do.
Well, I was just joking about beating up prisoners.
Boys will be boys.
Yeah. Well, no, Boys Will Be Boys is a different thing. Boys Will Be Boys is not joking about it. Boys Will Be Boys is saying, oh, well, men are that way. You can't change them. And that's a little bit of a fatalistic point of view.
That's actually the latest one. It's
may
an
not
earlier
be wrong.
One
it's meaning it's, an earlier it's, one it's this from May 15th. The spread of false or misleading information is having a real and negative effects on the public consumption of news.
And so it also talks about how the part of the so-called men's rights shtick is – that being a so-called loser is what they want to be because that's what ties them together because that makes them oppressed.
Right. But let me just take this and make it less general and more specific to our topic. basically, that's all we've been covering for the last decade, is how technology is disrupting all the incumbents, all the ways we're used to having things be. It's yep. very upsetting to everybody who's, you know, grown up in a different world, including me. I'm 60 years old. And it's you talk about techno panic. It's that, Jeff. It's that mm-hmm. it's the disruption of somebody who had a job and doesn't have a job. It's in the nature of this. We're seeing, you know, change happens all the time, but this is happening, I think, I would say, at an accelerated rate we've never seen before in humankind, maybe in 30,000 years. So it's incredibly upsetting to people, all people. And
not all, no.
All.
No, it's just those who are losing.
No.
Some, yeah. Those who are losing. Some
but
of those
every,
are energized.
But no, everybody's losing something. Everybody's losing something. The world you grew up in, even if you're only 20, is changing. And it's changing very rapidly. And the natural human inclination is to say no, and it comes out in a lot of ways. I think it's a mistake to say, oh, it's them that are upset and we're embracing change. And there's in everybody's life some aspect of this.
But also some people are gaining, obviously, clearly some are gaining in this.
I think it's a mistake. I think it's a huge mistake.
I am totally gaining in this. I will say every time people... I have sat through so much crap and not had it been validated and dealt with sexism, dealt with all kinds of things. And now I'm actually gaining the ability to speak out against that. So yes. I'm gaining huge amounts of, but, not necessarily power, but
as you hope
agency
your
here.
I think it's a risky right. thing to pick winners and losers in this. Because that's going to further polarize.
It's no, not but here's, winners here's and losers.
I understand what you're saying. You are gaining. However, yeah. I think it's a more politic thing to say that the change we are going through is disruptive to everyone, and we all are going to have to buckle down and start to understand that life is not going to be as it was.
But that inherent what you're saying is, and I don't mean you're saying this, but my the reason I'm objecting is because it sounds then as if the change is bad.
No, it feels bad.
The change brings just. No,
I don't think it's neither bad nor good. That's a mistake. It is neither bad nor good. It's neither winners or losers. That's one of the big mistakes we make that turns this into that polarizing point of view.
It's polarizing because some people are losing. You're
or have
like
lost
we're all losing the way it used to be.
No,
we are all
Leo,
losing the way it used to be.
That. Yeah, but most of us don't look at that as a loss. If you're an African American person, you don't say, "Wow, I really wish things could be the way they used to be back when," and even today. I mean,
if you're an African American cab driver, you might be glad that there's maybe perhaps less racism, but you may also be out of work soon. The point is that we are living in an unprecedented generation of change. It's disruptive. We're seeing huge disruption in every area. There, if you're a winner in one, I promise you, you will be a loser in another. And this is going to be one of the most difficult things for humans to go through. We're not built to accommodate this rate of change. That's all.
So I would say, and I'll expand on kind of the idea, because you actually said it. You were like, your instinctive response to change is, I don't like this. This is not fun. And I said that in my essay. I said, it's not fair. But the response that you have to things being upsetting and change messing with your life isn't to say it's not fair. It's to say, holy cow, what's happening? Reflect on how you fit into that. And that is actually a recipe for success when you're a cab driver without a job.
We're in agreement.
So I would say
we're in agreement. Instead of picking winners or losers or fair and unfair, good or bad.
I'm not saying we're in agreement there because I don't agree with you on that. But what I'm saying is tangential to that or next to that is the reaction you have to something being unfair is what matters.
Right.
And some people are actually going to be better equipped. If you're equipped to say, holy crap, this sucks. How can I get around it? You're actually going to be better off in a constantly changing world.
I agree. So there's a couple of things I think everybody it'd be great if everybody could do. One is to start embracing change. One is to acknowledge that change is discomforting and that we are all discomforted in one way or the other, and to have some sympathy for people who are discomforted by it. I understand if you don't want to have sympathy for your oppressors. That's completely understandable. But I think that in the long run, as a general rule, it'll be better if we can all acknowledge that this is uncomfortable for all of us in some way or other, and that the best way to deal with it is to acknowledge that and to embrace the change as best we can. We can agree on that.
Yeah, the only thing I think
that was
Casey
a lot
and I were
of things
to go
in
on.
There.
Well, I think that I'm trying to kind of take a little more of a Zen approach than say hate the oppressor and say, well,
I understand your Zen approach, but as someone who is dealing with this often I feel that a Zen approach will get me nowhere. And in the past, having a Zen approach has gotten me nowhere.
Yeah. No, so, I understand.
That's convenient for the oppressor for you to be Zen'd.
Well,
opiate of the masses,
you know,
right?
I mean, you could be Martin Luther King.
I don't really
King
want to be calling
could,
people oppressors.
You could be Martin Luther King or you can be Malcolm X. I mean, there are ways and ways to resist. I just think that the thing that we've been fundamentally covering on this network and in tech in general, but particularly on this network because we take kind of a more philosophical bent to it, is the vast disruptions that are occurring in our lives and are about to occur in even greater ways. We haven't even seen the disruptions that CRISPR is going to bring. You know, you want to have a big debate over over gender. You know, wait till we have the ability to genetically modify babies.
Oh my gosh. Have you guys, am I the only person who does this? Have you thought about what you would want modified from CRISPR?
Constantly. It's like thinking about what superpower you want. What do you want? What do you want?
I want sunblock. Impregnated skin.
That's called being an African American. You just want a little more, you just need a little more melanin in your skin.
No, they burn too. I'm like, God, how awesome would that be with climate change being crazy? And then I want some sort of like Bluetooth headset that's constantly in my head. Although when you start talking about implantables, standards become a real thing.
I want the metaverse. I want to jack in. I don't want to have to wear a visor. I want to jack in and be in the new world.
I just want to live longer. Leo, let me ask you an unfair question. If somebody on your staff had written a memo like this internally or, you know, done a show, how do you, as not just the manager, but also Twit is your brand, putting yourself in Google's shoes and running the culture and trying to have empathy inside the company and all that, how would you react if this happened at Twit?
That's an interesting question. I hadn't really thought about that. I have mixed feelings about them firing this guy. I understand why they had to, because he was creating a hostile workplace. And that's, if anybody did that here, and it was clearly a case of making a hostile workplace, understanding that this company is mostly run by women, I don't think there would be much tolerance for that. And I think that person would be gone. However, our hosts here are encouraged. It's a little different for a host, right? You're encouraged to stimulate discussions. I'm not going to put a Sean Hannity on the show. And if somebody started becoming a propagandist for a point of view, that might be different. But I mean, one could maybe argue that I should be fired because I'm not saying this guy should have been, you know, drawn and quartered and hung out to dry.
But if you got on your show and you argued that women are not good candidates for engineering because we're neurotic, I don't know if you should fire
horrible.
Someone who's a host.
That'd be pretty horrible. I guess we'd have to do something about that. Actually, I don't
have
think I'd have to
because
our audience. No, we've never had a case like that. I only hire intelligent people. That's an interesting question. This is not exactly the same thing, but we had somebody on one of our shows say that moon landing was a hoax. Never had him back on. It's not exactly the same thing.
Oh, moon landing. I thought you said moon landing. No,
moon landing was a hoax. We have had hosts on who believe in UFOs, and I can't knock them for that, even though we might disagree. But I don't think we've ever had anybody come on ever and say, well, women are somehow less suited to tech jobs than men. I think that.
Have you ever had, besides the moon landing, have you ever had something that's just dumb? Have you ever had anybody come on and say something offensive and you or someone on the staff said, let's not have that person back?
Oh, yeah.
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 All the time. We don't make a big deal out of it, usually.
This will be my last Twig show.
We don't. I don't want to cross over into censorship either. And so it's a little different in a, like if somebody says, put something on a company wall, that's very different than if somebody says something on a show. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if something like that were posted on our company wall, we'd probably fire the person. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you have a whole, I mean, your audience would react presumably to someone right. who's just
right.
a hateful person. And, you know, there are plenty of people who are hateful on the air. Or, and then the other thing to think about with a host is you could be perfectly normal and then you could do something crazy and like send dick pics to your staff.
Yeah. But well, they'd be fired for that. So
that goes into that hostile workplace.
Yeah. We do have an HR, employee manual, and we have very strict rules, just as Google does. And there are absolutely firing offenses. I don't really do the HR. Lisa does. And I can tell you, I doubt very much she would tolerate anything like that day more.
So the other interesting part of this is that Google now, and I think Yonatan did the best expression of this and put forward a summary that said, if you were my employee, here's what would happen and here's why. And so I think as a manager, he did a good job with that. But Google is now in a position where ever more they're going to be seen as political in their actions. Whether it's this.
Well, I wish we could throw the memo out and just say, do you think Google is left wing?
Google is liberal.
It's very liberal, but
look at it.
Could conservative speech is not tolerated there? Like if
not liberal like that. Google is the anti-conservatism, and conservatism in the most literal sense of the word, don't change. Google is pushing things forward. Good it is point. Constantly
yes.
changing.
That's right.
So that correlates to a lot of policies, but I don't think it's politically leaning one way or the other, except when it benefits Google.
The irony of all this, and one of the reasons Google did have to fire this guy, is their diversity is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really terrible. Not only 20% of women in tech jobs, 1% of African Americans at tech jobs. It's terrible.
But if you encountered this in Google, I mean, I've had friends who worked for Google, and Google does have a very big culture of worshiping the stereotypical engineer.
That's my point.
And
yes.
Break out of that.
You had a lot of points here.
No, but that's what I said in the beginning. Break out of that. We have this picture of what an engineer looks like, what tech looks like, how a computer should be. And we need to... Part of the reason that exists is because there's been this monoculture. We need we've got to break out of this monoculture. It's a terrible thing. It's a terrible thing, and it really hurts technology.
I think we can agree
not
there.
Disagree. Yeah, we're all going to nod our heads to that.
I think that's really the at the bottom line.
Yes.
That's kind of the fundamental bottom line of all of this. Is you don't creating a monoculture is not a good thing for a company that wants to make products for all the people, not just all the people in the U.S.
That's tech in a nutshell.
It is tech in a nutshell.
It's yes, that's
because in the early days of tech, and I was there, it was a bunch of us guys. And
it was media in a nutshell too. In the day, media was old white men, and here's a key difference, right? It's my mass shtick. In a mass world, you were making a single product for everybody. And so the majority could be favored. Two things have changed. The majority ain't majority anymore. But also, Google does not make, and Facebook is not, a mass product. It is a personal services product. So it has to work for people personally as their own. And if you're not able to make a product that service that does that for people because you don't understand them and their needs and their presumptions, then you will fail in the business. It was a lot easier making a mass product because you could just and television, news, all those products. Just said, let's get to the most people we can, and then you could go niche. Yeah, you go to a portion of that. But Google's very different. It's not niche. It's not mass. It's personal.
Did Connor Friesendorf get this wrong? Friedersdorf in the Atlantic. He said the media completely got this memo wrong. He said by labeling it anti-diversity, they were really misleading their readers about the actual contents.
I read that, and I thought that was just kind of dog whistling in some ways.
I think so too.
Because he's like, oh, this memo is really arguing
for diversity.
You know, for diversity, and for this guy, because he says in the beginning that he's not against diversity.
Right.
You know, I could say I'm not a racist, but I.
Let's not have.
Starts off there.
It's just not fair having black people in the Olympics because we white people can't compete against them.
There you go. I mean,
it's so ingrained in us. And so we're fighting, all of us are fighting an uphill battle in some degree.
That's true of all of us.
Yes, yeah. That is true.
And so the best thing, in my opinion, to do is to say just what I keep saying, which is as hard as this may be, a monoculture is bad, especially in a company that wants to produce products for everybody. And diversity is just, it's like Skittles. It's just bringing the rainbow. And that's what we want. I'm going to write the Skittles memo.
No.
Don't, Leo. No. Don't. We'll save you for yourself.
But it seems obvious to me that A, we're discomfited by this, and B, it's obviously the best way to go forward. And we have to acknowledge our discomfort and still go forward.
This is also why I object to your notion before that says that everybody is uncomfortable by change. If you have been oppressed, if you had a crappy life, then no, you could welcome the change. And the problem is that conservatives are the ones saying that the change is bad and everyone's uncomfortable with the change, so let's deal with the discomfort of the change.
That's picking one slice.
No, let's also celebrate the change.
Yeah, that's picking one slice of white men who have been in power for a very, very long time, have written history, and would like to keep it that way. And, of course they're going to be discomfited by the notion that they're not going to have a monopoly on history anymore. I understand that. You would be discomfited too. But
what I'm saying is not everybody. Stacey's not discomfited by that. Stacey says it long friggin' last. Right?
Yeah, but she might be discomfited by something else. I don't know. Do you miss dial telephones?
I don't know. Your poor dog that's discomfited because of Stacey.
I would say your job here isn't just to be like, hey, can't we all just get along and have a multicultural society? I think we actually all have to do real work around understanding other people's perspectives.
Oh, I'm not saying that's easy or, you know, well, I'm just saying the goal should be that, right?
Well, if the goal should be that, but you can't just, I mean, any manager will tell you, you can't just set a goal. You have to tell people how to get to that goal. And that's what Google's doing. And some people will argue that he's saying that, oh, the way we set about going about our goal is wrong. And that's a totally different discussion that no one can have because he filled his essay with so many freaking insults and dog whistles that kind of gets lost. And Mother Jones had an article that said, hey, guys, this memo looks fishy. And their idea was that this was kind of a alt-right kind of push out there to argue for free speech in Silicon Valley. So I don't know if that's true or not, but... The idea here is
my brothers at Mother Jones always did like a good conspiracy.
There you go.
So let me give you a different example. So I can't talk about this. We're dealing in an organization where there's some insensitivity going on, and I think it would be fair to say that people who are insensitive aren't aware of how they're insensitive, but they're in positions of power. It's not where I work. Don't worry. It's just a one thing I'm watching from a distance. And then how do people who are not in power try to educate those who are in power about how you treat those with less power? It's a dynamic that's pretty much impossible to fight. And so you can bring in outsiders, but it's easy to say, oh, yeah, okay, we brought in the consultants. Everything's okay. And there's an educational process too. Let me bring up a different thing. So have you seen Detroit?
Yeah.
Oh no, I haven't, but I want to.
So well, I've had different reactions to this. I thought it was excellent, but obviously there was.
Oh wait a minute, I didn't see Detroit. I saw Munich. What's Detroit?
Detroit is Catherine Bigelow's movie about the '67. oh, you're being no.
No, I haven't seen it. It's Catherine. I have a little bit of a problem with Catherine Bigelow in general. So,
well, that's an issue.
That's why I haven't watched it.
That's an issue. Yeah. And I have African American colleagues who say I'm not going to see it, and I almost want to say to them, I get it, but I almost wish you would, so that you could give a critique that would be meaningful, rather than just white media giving the critique.
Catherine Bigelow is like Oliver Stone. She seems to
there's an issue with facts.
Polemic to. Well, yeah. It always seems to be a political statement.
Oh, it's definitely a political statement. This is a definite.
I don't enjoy movies that are arguing a political point.
It's a very powerful political statement. Oh, you could look at it as saying that it was a white director exploiting black history. You could also say that it was a white person coming to grips with white oppression. You know, a lot of ways you can come about it. That's kind of where we are as a country now, is all I'm saying, is that, and then if you try to have the discussion, then it gets slammed into the political correctness debate, supposedly. We don't know how to address this person to person. We're still bad at that as a society.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So
Stacey,
my friend who is German, he actually, whenever we go out to dinner, we sit down and we start getting into these discussions, and he confessed to me, he's like, I always get so frustrated with you guys because Americans, they get right to the interesting part of the discussion.
Yeah, we don't lead up to it.
And then they just back right off. He's like, in Germany, this is where it gets good. And I was like, yeah.
We don't like confrontation here.
But I do think learning how to talk to people, how to actually listen, how to be respectful, and acknowledge that your experience is not everyone's experience, which I think a lot of people have a real hard time with.
Because it's not our experience. That's called empathy. That's called empathy. You girls are good at that. We're not so good at that.
Oh, I got it. Not even funny. Girls will be girls.
By the way, I read the Mother Jones article, and I want to retract what I said, because actually the writer has an interesting point. He thinks that this memo was intentionally made offensive.
Yes.
So that he could get fired so that he could portray himself as a martyr and even go to court, funded by some nice right-wing think tank. That, I don't think, is incorrect. I actually think that that's probably the case. Because he didn't need to assert, for instance, that there's a biological difference to make his points, but he did. He kind of went farther than, more offensive than he had to. Kevin Drum writing in Mother Jones. So
it was embedded.
Well, I don't know if he's embedded or he just said,
saw himself as such.
I think this is not an uncommon thing among certain alt-right believers, you know, people like Milo Yiannopoulos, who take it the extra step because they want it to become a cause célèbre.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Cults need enemies.
That's a strategy. That's a very
common,
well-used, well-known strategy. I'm sorry.
Especially if you're not really persecuted or oppressed.
Right. Well, Milo's gay. I mean, he could say, I know what it means to be oppressed, you know.
So is Peter Thiel, and that man is doing a number on.
That's kind of what I'm saying, is that nobody's, in real life, nobody's got it going on. Everybody's got issues. Yeah,
I don't know what you're talking about. Right. I have it going on.
Stacey
is awesome.
I am
number 8 on some survey, and by golly.
You are the winner here.
I am working hard to make things better.
I have to admit, when I read this, when this whole thing started last week, I said, I can't wait to talk to Stacey about this. And I did not anticipate, frankly, how upset you would be by it. I underestimated that a little bit. I think you were...
Upset's also a loaded word, too.
I think you were very insulted by this.
I was. Yeah. I feel... Well, it's because I have to argue against this stuff all the time. And also, as a woman in tech, I get very frustrated when people talk down to me or mansplaining happens all the time. But they make these assumptions about my knowledge base. And as a journalist, my job is to ask questions and to try to understand and learn things. So I don't mind people explaining things to me that are difficult and hard, but I do mind when people give me the equivalent of don't worry your pretty little head over it, as opposed to a real answer to something.
Right.
Or I mind when people hit on me when I'm asking them questions, or when I get excited about something. They think my excitement over software-defined networking is actually my excitement about them, and they're wrong.
Oh, Jesus. That is self-centered.
So let me give you a great example this week.
No, I'm really excited about software-defined networking, honestly.
It's not you. Excited as you are. No, it's not you. So there was I've been trying to read more of the right-wing sites, just trying to understand somewhat of what's going on. So, and not even far right wing, the National Review and so on and so forth. So I forget which site it went to. I went to a piece where it was trying to buy a lot. It was basically the Google version. It should have been the Onion, but it wasn't the Onion. It was biologically explaining and justifying man spreading. That women's hips are better being straight together. Men's are. It wasn't just the obvious. It was also about the bones and the hips and the whole thing.
I think it is a little overly political to assume that manspreading is an attempt to dominate women.
Oh, I can't stand.
It's not an attempt to dominate women. It's just they're saying screw anybody else who wants to sit here. I'm just entitled.
As somebody with weak adductor muscles and a very tight TI. Oh. My legs just naturally go that way. That's how they fall.
You know what?
But
on the New York subway, I close them otherwise, when there's a lack of
the New York subway, but I don't.
Right. When there's a lack of space, but it's work.
My favorite tweet was, I tweeted this and I said, of course, this site would say this is part of the man's rights movement now is to manspread. And the great tweet just said it was mansplaining, manspreading.
Well, let me tell you, honey. If you, I don't want to go any farther. I'm just going to stop right now.
Yeah. Should we move on to this singularity?
I'm glad we talked about this. Yeah. Thank you.
Let me ask one more question, Leo. Because it's a particular talent of yours that there's a topic like this, and at some point you have to personally have a fatigue about it to say, I've gone through this. It's difficult. We've already discussed it.
Well, especially the way we do shows, because this topic's been a topic of discussion for four or five years now.
So how many shows has it been a topic on? How do you do that? How do you keep that fresh? How do you not say at some point, guys, I can't do it anymore? I just can't.
Well,
the good news is
I'm kind of slow. So a lot of times my first take on something evolves over the period of discussions with people more intelligent than me, like you and Stacey. And so it this probably drives our audience crazy if they watch all the shows. They go, "Well, Leo's changed his mind now," but I am slow, and so sometimes I need to talk.
You listen.
My nature is I'm a chewer, and it takes me a while to kind of. It drives Lisa crazy. She's exact opposite. She's very decisive. And lots of evidence that being decisive, even if you're wrong some of the times, is more effective than chewing on things. But I chew, but that's just the way I am. So I always have been that way and drives her crazy. And so I chew on it. And so it takes me a while. It takes me about 4 or 5 days. And a lot of these complicated issues, to understand them, to think about my thought. And I spend a lot of time. The worst thing, Jeff, it's not just the shows. I go home and I think about this. I've been thinking I thought all night about, well, how are we going to handle this? And what are we going to talk about? That's just the way I am. And so it's fine for me. It works for me. It may not work for our audience. I always assume that, which is wrong, that everybody just watches one show. So this isn't repeating anything.
So you have rabid fans. But
many of our listeners we know from surveys listen to multiple shows, and they're probably very sick of it.
But they're screaming at their car radios right now saying, yes!
But I also, to a fault, as you well know, like to look at the other side of stuff. Mm-hmm. I tend to be more empathetic to people and to think about, well, how does that feel and why do they say that and what are they thinking there, and try to get it from their point of view, which is, makes for lousy discussions. But
no, it doesn't. It's good discussion.
Well, it isn't, because it's better in this kind of a forum to have a strong position.
Right. I didn't mean to delay the transition.
I take it. Well, I'm glad you asked, because nobody ever asks about me. Anything else you'd like to know? I'm glad to.
But enough about Google. How about me?
What about me? This Week in Leo. It's a new show.
This Week in Leo. Yes,
my new show. Well, some would say they're all This Week in Leo. All right, let me take a break, and we're going to come back and talk more. Stacey Higginbotham is here from Stacey on IoT, IoTpodcast.com. Do read her post on Medium. Why did you post it on Medium?
Because it's not IoT related.
Oh, that makes sense. Did you link to it, though, from anywhere?
Twitter? Did I put it on Facebook? This is hard with the fragmentation of stuff. I'll put it in my newsletter. I'll be like, hey, guys, by the way, I wrote this.
Oh, good.
I didn't remember seeing it on Facebook.
Yeah.
But that doesn't matter. Yeah. Defeat me, I'll give you my stuff.
So the title of it is, Guys, It's Time to Grow Up. And you can search for Google Stacey's Ties, It's Time to Grow Up on Medium, and you'll find it. Our show today brought to you. And Jeff Jarvis is here all the way from Chicago, the urban carnage capital.
Pizza night. It's deep dish pizza night. You know, when I was at People Magazine,
so jealous.
I was sent around the country. This is the days when Medium made a lot of money. I was sent around the country to personally judge the best pizza in America.
This is where your heart problems came from. God, Jeff.
So this will be the most controversial thing said on this show today.
What's the best pizza in America? And I'm going to really be mad at you if you don't pick the right one.
I judged it to be Gino's East in Chicago.
Wow. You like the deep dish. I'll give you that. I mean, I'm personally a Pepe's New Haven fan, but that's a tomato pie. That's a flat thing.
Yeah.
And for deep dish, I don't know, have a preference about.
But I used to be on Ron Owen's show here in San Francisco, back in San Francisco where you are.
In fact, I'm going to be Ron in a couple of weeks.
Oh, Ron's the greatest. And I would watch the, please do. And I'd watch the board, and I was being boring, and the phone calls were coming in. All I would have to do is just say, you know, you can't get a decent pizza in this town. Yep. Boom!
I'd be really interested if, when you come to Petaluma next, maybe our next Christmas dinner will be at our local old Chicago pizza, and I'm curious what you think of it, because I think it's pretty good, but I didn't realize I was talking to a pizza expert. Little did I know. What makes you a pizza expert?
The boss was nice to me.
That's a great gig.
I never got any good gigs like that.
You can't win that one. But it actually is.
Hey, see, you get every doorbell made. Yeah. I'm jealous of that.
Oh, Lord, that's...
You got to install them.
I'm like, someone send me around to test mole or queso or the best Italian cream cake.
What's the best queso in Austin?
Foods on dogs.
I have an assignment for you, Stacey, and I'll give you an expense account. Find the best queso in Austin, and then send me a case of the queso.
Yeah.
Oh, but queso's so, like...
perishable.
There's that. If I send it to you, personal. It's just going to be a brick, rubbery brick.
It's personal.
But yeah, it's very personal.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's...
send me out for mole.
I could drink a case of queso and still be on my feet. Mole. You like mole?
I love mole.
Do you like a spicy mole?
I do. I like it spicier, less chocolatey.
Yeah. I had some very good mole in South America. The best mole.
I would bet so.
Yes. The best mole, though, is in South Mexico, where you get the South American influence, but you also get a Mexican influence, and I think it's very good. I would recommend anywhere in Oaxaca.
Okay.
Excellent mole down there. Let's all go. I'm tired of this tech battle.
I'm taking my Spanish again, so I'm ready for you.
Good.
I've got a Spanish-speaking child, so I'm working it.
Ooh.
She goes to she's bilingual school, right?
She is.
That's so neat. That's such a good idea. Our show today brought to you by, it solves a problem I think a lot of you have. I know when we're doing the radio show, people always call me and say, what's the best business accounting software? Nobody's ever asked me what's the best medical office management software, but I'm sure that's because they think, I'm not going to ask that doofus. But I bet you what you do when you're looking for that kind of thing is you Google it. And then what do you get? You get a lot of undifferentiated results, a lot of research to do. Why go there when you can go to Capterra? Go to Capterra.com/twig. This is a free service. It's a software comparison site for business software, over 400 categories, thousands of programs, and best of all, more than 200,000 reviews and ratings from actual users. They vet them, they curate them, so that you get the best information about the software you're looking for. Look at all these categories. Let's say, I don't know, what do you pick one, Carson? Construction, there's a good one. So I don't know anything about construction software. So you click construction. Now it's going to give you a bunch of construction management products. I mean, like 100. Maybe you want to narrow that down. So go on the right there. You could choose what capabilities. You could say, I only want to see 4-star reviews that are web-based or local-based. You could tell it all the things you need to do. Press, you know, filter. And now you've narrowed it down to just the programs that do what you need them to do. You can take a step further. Put a checkbox in the bottom of the icon there. I'm walking Carson through the site to pick one for the comparison. See that? You can pick up to 4, and it'll make a nice comparison chart for you with everything you need to know. And then you can read the reviews. You can really narrow it down. This is so much better than a Google search. Know exactly what software is out there, what fulfills your exact specific needs, how people who actually use it review it. And this is all free. There's not even any register. There's no obligation. Nobody's going to call you or email you. This is just a great directory, and they wanted you to know about it. I want you to know about it. Capterra, CAPTERRA.com/twig. Business software is expensive. You know it's really expensive? Picking the wrong business software. Find the right software for your business free right now at Capterra, CAPTERRA.com/twig. And we thank him so much for being on the show this week in Google, CAPTERRA.com/twig. Twig. See any good IoT devices lately, Stacey? Is there anything you're excited about? I bet you get that question a lot.
Ooh, I'm excited about the changes coming to HomeKit. Oh my God, it's so dark in here.
Well, maybe
I just saw my screen.
You should give a command to your lights to turn on or something. Oh yeah, you get storms, don't you?
I do. I think that's what's happening. I don't have this light is not actually tied into something yet, because I've got to save switches to test out new switches.
You have to have a refuge somewhere that's not wired. HomeKit is Apple's home solution. And, you know, this is, and we've talked about this before. Every year I would go to at Comdex and then later CES. I'd go to the Home Automation Pavilion, and there'd be all these vendors and all this promise. And it was never intended for home end users. It was always intended for installers. And even then, it just wasn't really a great solution. It was like for the Hollywood director that wanted to press one button and his bed would rotate, the curtains would close, the screen would come down, the picture would come on or whatever. It was not something normal people would use. And now the tech industry has promised all this stuff. It's still hard to work together. And so we need a hub. We need something ideally we could talk to. That's what I think Apple's, HomePod. I think that's the point of the Apple thing is you could talk to it and it will it will become a hub, right? So you're saying HomeKit, we're seeing some improvements in HomeKit to support this?
Yeah, so there's two things. There's actually three things that I think are interesting here. One is, So they're taking away their cert chip. So you used to have to have a certification chip in the physical device. And they introduced this at WWDC in May and said, and it was a very much a little aside. They were like, by the way, people can have software-based HomeKit. And everyone was like, what?
That's interesting because that would have been a cost, right? And it would have limited how many devices would support HomeKit.
It does. And I had to buy separate gear if I wanted to update my HomeKit stuff.
Right.
So the second thing, so this is great because now people can retroactively add HomeKit to existing products. We're not 100% sure how this program works yet. I've been begging people to tell me, if you know and want to tell me, I will keep it off the record.
Because it's not hardware. Now you could just do it in software on anything.
It's not, you have to do something with Apple. You can't just magically make your stuff HomeKit compatible without working with
Apple. What do you have to do with Apple? You have to license something?
That's the question. It used to be that you had to be an MFI developer
and get that license. Made for iPod or made for iPhone. Yeah.
Made for eyes.
So
I don't know what they're doing now. But two is when the HomePod comes out in December, people can actually control stuff in their home even if they don't have an Apple phone. So like as an Android user, this is really important to me because I would never go all in on HomeKit because I can't control it from my phone. I don't often need to control my devices from my home or my phone, but I would still be pissed off if I couldn't control it, especially because I'm the IT guy at our house. And then three, I'm forgetting the third one. What is the third one? Oh my gosh. Oh, they made it easy to run things without having to in the Home app on the phone. So you don't actually have to play with all of your devices in like the 30 different apps you have for each device. So that's kind of cool.
It's interesting that they've dropped the MFI requirement.
Isn't it?
I think they realized Apple-y thing to do.
It's not, but I think they realized they had to, the smart home was a thing that was happening.
Right.
And
they wouldn't be a player if they did this, probably.
If they forced everyone, I mean, let me tell you, the entire smart home device community was just, they hated it. They hated working with Apple.
Right.
As much as they wanted to. They wanted that Apple marketing heft and that credibility, but they were just like,
And remember, though, this is a new market in some ways for Apple. So it's not like you know, if Apple does something with the iPhone, everybody has to toe the line because you have hundreds of millions of devices out there. But all the home stuff is relatively new. And so Apple is not dominant in this market. So I think Apple couldn't act in the dominant way it would like to with ecosystem lock-in because it just doesn't have that power.
Mm-hmm. Right now, the only dominant thing is the Amazon Echo. You have to launch something with an Echo skill.
Yep.
That's about it.
But that's easy to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, yes. It'd be better if you had native integration, but they're working on that.
Yeah.
So, and yes, the HomePod is the speaker. It's an Echo speaker-like device that Apple introduced recently. And then it won't actually be out until like December.
All right. Very good.
Oh, someone called me on being the IT guy. As I said it, I was like, oh, crap. See, it's sexism right there in action. And they're right. I'm the IT gal.
I'm going to say her from now on. My new pronoun is her.
Oh, I got in trouble for that.
You did?
Yes, I did.
What's wrong with that?
I'll screw it up. I'll get in trouble again by saying it. Yes, I used in my book, I used... my default was female.
I do that in all my articles.
I would absolutely encourage that.
Somebody came after me.
In trouble by some jerk or an actual...
No. It was a feminist argument against doing that. I can't remember what the argument was.
There's no feminist argument against doing that.
Oh, well.
I don't buy that. That's a crypto something. The book, this came up for me in my mind the other day. I'm listening to a wonderful book, which I highly recommend, called Sapiens. By Yuval Noah Harari. And Harari, I don't actually know if it's a man. He's a man. Harari is writing the kind of book I love, which is probably anathema to social scientists and historians and anthropologists and geologists, which is the broad brush look at how societies work and stuff like that. It's the, you know, the guns, germs, and steel, Jared Diamond kind of stuff. I love that stuff. Going back to Alfred Toynbee, who said geography is destiny, all that. I love all that stuff. So in this, though, he always uses the feminine pronoun, her, to talk about cavemen or Neanderthals or early Homo sapiens. It's always her. And at first, it's a little jarring. And now I love it. Why should it be him? Why should it be he? It's just, I mean, what? I don't understand. Why would you presume one gender or another? One's as good as another, and why should it be she? So I've totally got used to it. But at first, it was like, what? Every time he said it, I went, oh, she, yeah. He's being politically correct. He's being inclusive. And the reason, yeah, you're right, in the chat room, the reason I'm reading this is because his new one, which is about the future of our species, Homo Deus, just came out. And I want to read this before I read that.
Ooh.
Yeah, I like. Do you? I bet you like that kind of stuff, Stacey. Too. I think you like broad. When I was in college, they said, "Oh, you just love generalizations." But
I tend to
like synthetic stuff. Synthesis.
I read them, but some of them irritate me. I actually like this is not going to surprise anybody. Really in-depth, nerdy.
Yeah, you're
books.
A geek.
I'm like, if I could learn everything possible about the subject in one book that's like crazy textbook thick, yes, I will.
There is one book that combines both geekery and broad generalities that you must read, and you probably have read it, George Gilder's Microcosm.
No, I don't think I have.
I never did. I should have, yeah.
I am sending you both a copy of it as soon as we get off the air.
There will be a quiz.
It's old. This was written 27 years ago. This is not a new, but it is fundamental to understand what's happening today, because it's the it's about the unique situation that digital technology is, that as time normally stuff as time goes by, you know, the normal case of events like a car, you know, maybe it doesn't ever get less expensive. It gets more capable at the same price, maybe, if you're lucky. Usually gets a little more expensive. With digital technology, it gets smaller and cheaper by orders of magnitude every year and a half. And actually, that doubles every year and a half, so it's not quite an order of magnitude. But that's the idea, is an exponential rate gets smaller and cheaper, and that's what's made all of this possible. And that's the revolution, fundamentally, that's causing all this disruption, that's making us all nuts. Did you read about the iGen?
Is that the new generation?
Yeah.
Okay, I was like, is this a device or is this the generation?
It's both. Article in The Atlantic. It's actually by the way, The Atlantic had so many good articles this week that I bought a subscription. I said, you know what? This is
– wow.
I got to give them some money.
And you know who owns the majority of The Atlantic now.
Well, I do. It's Steve – I don't want to call her Steve Jobs' widow, but she is.
Lorraine Powell Jobs.
Lorraine Powell
and
Jobs.
And Emerson Collective.
Yep. What would you call it? Fund? It's a fund.
Well, I think it's a fund, yeah.
Fund for Journalism, the Emerson Collective. Yeah, she bought
and other things, other causes.
Controlling
as well.
Stake in the Atlantic, which is another reason I gave him $20. Anyway, iGen is a book coming out soon from Dr. Gene Twenge, why today's super connected kids are growing up less rebellious, more tolerant, less happy, and completely unprepared for adulthood.
Oh, this kind of generality drives me.
I know. And this is another example of something we've been talking about all week.
This is techno panic, and this presumes that our kids aren't, our own children aren't smart and aren't able to do things and learn and figure out their own world better than we did.
The premise is that since 2007, since the advent of the iPhone and the smartphone in general, the iPhone specifically, children have had their lives have changed. They don't go out as much. They stay in more. They're safer than they've ever been. They're having sex at a later age. And she, by the way, Dr. Twenge is a specialist in generational differences. This is her field. And she quotes a number of studies. Here's the graphs. The kids, since the release of the iPhone, they don't hang out as much with friends. They don't drive. They drive at a much older age. They're dating less. They're having less sex. But they're also more likely to feel lonely, to get not enough sleep. That's because I know a lot of kids go to bed with their phones. I go to bed with my phone. I'm in that group. It's different, though, because my brain was fully developed before this, the advent of the iPhone. This is about the generation that's coming of age with smartphones and Snapchat and always on and constant screen time and all of that.
So I have a daughter who fits into this generation.
That's why I brought it up.
And two, one of my good friends does generational research. He's a famous speaker on that topic. So we actually have a lot of conversations about generational differences. And I think the way this is framed is very techno-panicky. I do think the relationship that kids have with their phones is unprecedented. I imagine it is very similar to the relationship teens had with their cars when teenagers actually started getting cars or having access
to them.
Their
record players or their, you know, pick your thing.
You know, you can find techno-panic quotes about kids reading too much and not getting outside.
Those weird
enough.
Pulp Fiction books.
So every generation has been worried that
comic
the next generation
books,
isn't going to be anything like
books.
It. This is another example of they're changing and I don't like it because change is bad.
Bingo.
But
and it fundamentally doesn't trust the next generation to adapt and create a new world. It's the old generation saying it's different from ours, so it must be bad.
I do think that we should be discussing, though. So I don't think technology is inherently bad, but I do think we've talked about this in the past, but the manipulation that websites and apps have to keep people engaged and to bring them back, and the influence of the algorithms that Facebook or, you know, Snapchat or Instagram uses, to decide what to show you. Those all are things that I think we actually do need to look at and how that affects not just kids, but kids are more vulnerable in the sense right. that they're trying to figure out the relationships with their peers, their world. They don't have a sense of identity always that they can fall back on. Like if someone's a jerk to me on Twitter, I just close it down because I have a whole other life. But when all of your peer group is on, they're not on Twitter. I'm just.
No, but whatever. You're right. That the opportunity for bullying.
I think there are real things that we need to look at, but I don't think that this is. I don't think technology is bad for kids. I do think it does change some aspects of growing up, but that's the constant in the world.
It's going to happen. But I do. I also think it's unprecedented. I think it isn't like books and cars and television. My parents didn't want us to watch a lot of television. This is kind of unprecedented because Stacey nailed it. Thanks to massive data, we now can make highly addictive games.
I remind you of what was the play? What was the musical? Bye Bye Birdie.
Yeah.
Right?
On the phone.
Every teenager
with the wire.
On the phone. Yeah. Oh my God. What's it doing to teenagers? They're all on the phone. This is ruining their lives. They're changing their social situation. They're addicted to each other. They're talking to each other. No, I have faith in our kids. I have faith in
I used to fall asleep, yes, with my phone. I would literally fall asleep talking to my friends on the phone on my own. My parents had to buy a second line.
And haven't you told us that you snore too? So that
yes,
your friends. It's a good thing they couldn't record calls in those days.
That is true. I don't think I snored when I was that young though. It's now with allergies and moving to Austin and but
too much time on the phone.
There we go.
I do worry about. Here is Bye Bye Birdie. By the way, I do. That's Ann Margaret on the left on the phone with her friend, and they just talk. And I think as the number goes along, they're all talking to one another.
All talking. It's split screen. Yeah.
Yeah. It becomes split screen. And but I remember that when I was a kid, that was a constant complaint of parents is I can't use the phone because, you know, the kids are always on the phone talking to each other. When Abby, it's kind of funny. My daughter's 25. When she was growing up, she would be on Skype while they were doing homework so that she'd have video calls, group video calls with a bunch of people. But then my son, who's 3 years younger, it's all been Snapchat for him and Facebook. And it's very interesting. The generations are actually changing already from 3 years, every 3 years is something new.
Well, things change. Go ahead, Stacey.
Well, I was going to say, and there's also something this article didn't talk about, and I wish they
would. They're even doing it in the locker room.
I don't
believe it.
Okay.
This is the silliest movie ever.
It really is. Yeah. It really is.
I have not seen it.
You haven't seen Bye Bye Birdie? Oh, you got it. It's fun.
Oh, I'm younger than you are. I'm sorry.
What?
But what I was saying is there is a very predatory way that companies are taking advantage of kids.
Me.
And that is, I don't care if your kids have to be better or what, but I think as parents, we do need to be more aware of that. Like my daughter is on a game and it's called Star Stables Online. And I spend a huge amount of time talking to her about how the game is manipulating her to spend money.
Good.
But it's.
That's making it a valuable education experience for her. And decontextualizing.
Right,
it's like when we were young, our parents told us how television ads were manipulating you, right?
Right.
Well, I tell my daughter how television ads are manipulating, and I tell her she's not on Facebook, but she's a big YouTube user. And like I started a YouTube channel, and she asks me literally every day how many YouTube subscribers I have because this is a very important number to her.
Yeah, it is. To her generation, it's huge. I didn't realize this is a horse game full of adventures. I've got to play Star Stable. This looks great.
No. Oh, God. You pay so much money for real.
My Star Stable. I am Leela Foglund.
Oh, I can see the torture. Oh, God.
I don't want my horse to be. I'm going to have it be Amethyst Champion. There's my horse's name.
You can play for free for the first 5 levels. It's $75 for an unlimited thing.
Let's also
and then
talk
you have
about
to
the
buy...
body image of that young woman.
Well, I don't see
my
any...
daughter actually brought that up. She was like, I don't like the way the girls look. They look weird, like eels. And I was like, they do. They do look freaky.
How come there's no boys in this game?
This is
not. Excuse me.
I know. This is apparently. There are boys that play it. And they.
Yes. Yes.
God, look at her leg. She is freaky looking.
Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And body dysmorphia all rolled into one.
All rolled into one.
So anyway.
I'm giving her red eyes because she's been up all night on her iPhone.
But there's actually like they have a whole twitchy kind of thing about this where the girls do videos of their horses and they talk about like, you know how there's those swag haul videos? They do the haul videos in Star Stables. So you buy these virtual things and then you show your new things that you bought in the virtual world. And Jeff, this is a big deal with the tweets.
You cannot, Jeff, in any way claim that anything but that this company, whatever this horrific company is designing a product to be absolutely a money, squeeze money out of children.
Yes, especially if you sell fake hay. But, you know, on the other hand, Leo, I complained on the show many years ago when my then young daughter was playing with American Girl.
So much money on American Girl dolls.
That, but then there was a social network around it.
They're in Chicago. They could go to the American Girl dolls store. They have doll. They have a tea party. I did this. I took my daughter.
I would look like a very dirty old man.
They have a tea party.
Yes.
But I brought my daughter, and she brought her best friend. They both bought American Girl dolls. The two dads and the two daughters, and then I said, we'll go to the American Girl store and the tea party. They have a little chair for your dog.
Yeah.
But we're going to a Cubs game. And then I never forget the image of me holding the American Girl doll in the bleachers at Wrigley Field, and my daughter sat in front of me saying, this is boring, Dad. I know, but it's fun. No, she liked it. She'll never forget that. That was a great trip. They have a little hospital there for the American Girl.
Oh, yeah.
So, no, but that's not as addictive as this. That's the point.
Wait. They had a social network, right? And you could argue on the one hand that this is an exploitation just for the brand. And like the arguments, Facebook does everything just to get you on more. But my daughter, when they closed it, my daughter was crushed.
Yeah.
It was a community. She had, it was a safe community with friends that was gone. The example you gave me, that's pretty awful. But we shouldn't presume that just because the company makes it and the kids like it, that it's necessarily awful. It depends on how it's done.
Oh, right. Well, yes. I just feel we do have to acknowledge that there are different ways your kids are going to be preyed on in each technological evolution. And so we have to, and this one's particularly, I guess, insidious because it's woven into the fabric of some of these things. And it happens a lot of time when the computer, like on the computer or the phone, you're not with them, you know, like it's not like you're teaching your kid how to drive, or it's not like you're all watching TV as a family and you get a chance to talk about this together. You have to be very active. And I don't spy on my child. I don't do anything like that. So for all I know, we do talk about not being able to unsee things. And
yeah, that's a big one, right? Because kids will see things that they're really not ready for.
I see things I'm not ready of. Yeah.
Yeah, but we can deal with it, right? They don't have any context to deal with it.
I have never seen Two Girls, One Cup. I've never seen Goatsy.
Yeah, you don't want to see that stuff. Is. Yeah, because it really does burn its... As soon as you say either one of those, I actually, you know, I can
see. I bet you think about
it's
it.
It's in my
I
mind. Well, I don't think about it, but you brought it up, and it's in my mind. It's there. It's stored away.
So I don't know.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Stacey.
Well, we're doing a grand social experiment. The truth is, we are doing a grand social experiment. For instance, Lisa's son, he's 14, lots of screen time. Fairly laissez-faire. In fact, we made the decision he's going into high school that he could have the computer in his room now. We're setting it up tomorrow. Megan Maroney's kids, she's much stricter. All the digital stuff is kept in one charging area, and it has to be left there at night. And she's got controls on the thing. So we're doing a social experiment to see which kid turns out to be a serial killer.
No. I like how that's your option. Technology's great.
How much did you spend on Pokemon cards?
As a father? God, we couldn't drive by 7-Eleven without stopping to buy Pokemon cards a lot. And they're, you know, bits of cardboard for $15. I mean, they're really expensive.
What were the Thai Care Bear things? Those little bears, right?
The Tamagotchis.
No, that too. No, the little stuffed animal, the little stuffed Thai.
But
things.
I would say it's not on a continuum.
We have 1,000 of those. I hate them so much.
Wait, but that's your kid's too young for that. She's too young for that, isn't she?
Beanie Babies?
They had Yeah, she's only. Beanie Babies like 15 years ago.
Well, Leo's saying it was all over.
It was over by the time she was.
Oh, born. No. She has like. She does have more than 60 of them, and you walk into a room and they all look at you with their big beanie eyes.
All our old studio was actually where we, because it used to be a drugstore before we moved in. It was where we bought the Beanie Babies when my kids were little.
I used to bring them back from the airport whenever I'd travel.
That's fine. That's nice. That's a nice gift. That's good. That's not bad. You traveled a lot, though.
Yeah, I was like, my husband travels, I travel.
Lots of Beanie Babies. I guess the point being, is this a continuum from every generation? It's always been like this, and it's just steady state. Is it getting worse? I feel like it might be getting worse because of technology being better, more adept at manipulating the kids.
Or the kids are getting smarter. This is where Dana Boyd comes in, who used to study teenagers. You have to have faith in your kids. They are inventing the systems to work around that, right? So she, one of her great examples that I love this from Dana was that the presumption that we oldsters make is that kids don't care about their privacy anymore. They just share everything. And Dana said, no, they came up with languages to do things. I might have told the story on the show years ago, but a girl was on Facebook. Her mother was on Facebook. She was okay with that, but the girl was having trouble with a boyfriend. She didn't want her mother to smother her with love. So she went onto Facebook and she put up the lyrics to, and I always forget this, the end of Life of Brian when he's crucified.
Every sperm is sacred. No.
No.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Look on the bright side. Yeah. Right? So her mother thought, oh, good dear, you're having a wonderful day. And every friend came in and said, oh my God, what's wrong? Because there was a secret language that protected privacy,
no, that's right.
But still communicated.
That exists.
We've got to have. Isn't that a great story?
Did you see the study that you can tell whether somebody is depressed based on their Instagram posts?
I thought it was their Facebook posts.
Also their voice.
Well, this is a recent.
Their general unwashed appearance.
This was in Fortune magazine. This is from the University of Vermont and Harvard, published in the EPJ Data Science Journal. They built a tool to scan Instagram posts that could accurately identify depression in 70% of the study's participants. Doctors are only successful 42% of the time. They looked at 44,000 Instagram photos posted by 166 study participants. About half had been diagnosed with depression in the past. They analyzed things like hue, the use of filters, the presence of people. They were able to determine depression markers. For example, depressed people were more likely to post photos with darker gray colors. They liked the inkwell filter. You ever use the inkwell filter? Mm-hmm. People aren't depressed. Use the Valencia filter.
So all the way back in 2014, so this is a Fast Company article from 2014. It says your Facebook status updates can show if you're depressed.
Yeah, but now we've got a computer program that does it. And with greater accuracy than a clinician. Now, I'm going to give you another data point on this. My contention that it's getting worse, that kids growing up in, you know, playing video games all day or on their phone all night are more, disassociated from real life and will end up growing up with social issues. And it goes
I'll give you another theory.
Okay, but let me give you this data point.
Oh, shut down. Okay, sorry. You did a point.
Steve Bannon. No, he didn't grow up in his basement. I don't know where he grew up. But the point being, he had an insight because you remember after he was at Goldman Sachs. Goldman gave him money to create a gold farming business in Asia. They hired Asian kids to create wealth in World of Warcraft, which they would then make money on by selling it for real money to gamers, World of Warcrafters. But his business ended up getting shut down. Did you read this? His business ended up getting shut down because of gamers – who took this as a huge violation of integrity, as cheating. And he discovered at this time, this was late 2010, you know, around 2010, that this is the quote from Steve Bannon. These guys, these rootless white males, had monster power. It was the pre-Reddit. He discovered a world populated by millions of intense young men who had been socially maladroit but were smart, focused, relatively wealthy, and highly motivated about issues that mattered to them. And it was this insight that brought him to build up Breitbart, to bring in Milo Yiannopoulos, because Yiannopoulos could whip up disaffected gamers and, in fact, was a big fueled Gamergate, right? So is there a class of kids who grew up kind of with this anomie who are being manipulated and are, in fact, a danger to our society? That's my thesis. Jeff Jarvis.
Or did the anomie come from us as parents being overly protective, and this is going to go back to
the conservatism? That's how they ended up in the basement. Again. No, that's how they ended up in the basement. I agree.
We said,
don't go outside. Stranger danger. Right.
In stranger danger, we had to schedule their play dates. This is conservatism. In my day, the parents just kicked us out of the house and we went out and played, right?
Well, I'm not debating the cause of it, of course, but did we not create a class of dangerous people?
I'm going to agree that kids today have a lot more anxiety and stress than we had. It could be parents. It could be lots of things.
I win. Victory. All right, moving on. Now you want something scary. Google has decided that the next project DeepMind will take on, and remember, it's the Go champion, is StarCraft.
See, I'm worried about DeepMind that it's going to have a bad adolescence.
I think this is unfair. If DeepMind beats everybody at Go, that's one thing. That's a human game. But StarCraft is a game created on computers, played by computers. It seems like a computer would have a real advantage. Of course a computer can win StarCraft. Their DeepMind is analyzing 65,000 past StarCraft II games to apply machine learning techniques and become a StarCraft master.
Well, how much of StarCraft depends on hitting the right button at the right time?
100%.
Okay, so, yeah, the computer's going to totally win at that.
Why wouldn't it win?
I mean, even Jeopardy, which part of Jeopardy is hitting the button at the right time, right? If you listen to Ken Jennings talk about it, that was an advantage that Watson had. Now, to beat Watson, you had to buzz in before Watson did.
Right.
But
Watson could do it perfectly every time, right?
It did wait for the end of the question. Watson.
Well, you have to. That's the rule. You have to wait till Alex stops talking. Then you can hit
it. Oh, really?
Yeah.
When I play at home shouting at my television.
Oh, no. I take pride in answering it before Alex stops talking. I try to answer the first five words.
Yes, every grandfather does that. Yes.
I know. I'm that guy now. I sit in my easy chair. It's got a dent where my butt's been for the last 40 years. And shout
all
at
right,
Alex.
All right. Here's the real litmus test.
Trebek!
Wheel of Fortune, yes or no?
No.
Good. Thank you.
Sometimes I'm watching Jeopardy and it comes on. I might forget to turn it off.
I don't actually watch any of those types of shows because I don't have TV. I don't have over-the-air television.
You could play it on my Echo, you know.
Wheel of Fortune?
No, Jeopardy.
Or Jeopardy. Oh, I lost to Watson at Jeopardy.
Oh, okay. I keep saying I'm going to take the Jeopardy test and try to get on Jeopardy.
I've always wanted to do that.
Yeah. Well, that would be the greatest
thing. It's kind of
thing.
Like I was better equipped
in college. They should do a geek, because everybody on Wheel of Fortune is a geek anyway.
Right.
But then they should do a tech
Wheel of Fortune?
Week.
No,
Jeopardy. Not Wheel of Fortune.
Jeopardy.
He's getting a little confused.
Okay. It's time to take your pills, Jeff.
It's time to take a break, Jeff. Jeff Jarvis is here. He's from Chicago. He is on at buzzmachine.com.
Pizza night.
Are you going to go with a bunch of other professors and have Geno's?
Well, I just talked to the associate dean into it. So,
are you going to Geno's?
I hope Geno's. I'm right next to Uno's and Due's, but I'm still a believer in Geno's. I used to be on every menu at Geno's.
Yeah, because you said the best pizza in America. Jeff Jarvis, People Magazine.
I'm not pissed. I'm still not there.
What's the competition? Not Uno and Duos. It's like Illuminati's and stuff like that.
Well, there's all that new stuff now, but that's I'm a pizza conservative, so that.
We have Uno's out here, but I can't imagine it's as good as Uno's in Chicago.
Uno's is like
it's a chain.
It's a chain now. Pie with it's like
that's
oh,
what
it's,
this is. It's a pie. It's a deep dish. Stacy.
I'm not a deep dish pizza person. It's too much. I like the Neapolitan style, very flat.
Yeah, you can only eat one piece of Gino's because it's like this.
I mean, I'm sorry.
Unbelievable.
Oh, I'm kind of with you, and that's why next time we're in New Haven together, I'm taking you to Pepe's Pizza to get a tomato pie, garlic and clam tomato pie.
Well, that's three days of misery.
You will die, but you'll die happy.
All right.
There's always a line, rain or shine. There's always a line at Pepe's Pizza. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. There's no line when applying for a mortgage at Rocket Mortgage, you know? You don't have to even put on your pants. You don't have to get up. You don't have to go to the bank. You could do it from the convenience of your home, your couch, on your phone, on your tablet, on your computer. Hey, here's really the most likely scenario. This weekend, you know, I like to do this. Everybody likes to do this. You want to drive around, look at open houses, right? Just see how the neighbors live. And you look at a house and you go, hey, this is great. Good price. We should buy this. Now, you could just go home and dream, or you could and bookmark it now, rocketmortgage.com/twig. Fire it up, and you could get loan approval while you're standing there, before you leave the open house. That's how fast Rocket Mortgage is. It's an entirely online mortgage process, and it's from the best lender in America. So that's just icing on the cake. Look at this. Number one in customer satisfaction in the U.S. J.D. Power year after year after year in both primary mortgage origination and mortgage servicing. They are beloved, and rightly so. But they've also done something special for us geeks. They've created an online mortgage approval process. Quicken Loans is huge, so they've got relationships with all the financial institutions. You don't have to go through all your papers, find your check stubs or bank statements or whatever, you know, paperwork you need. You can literally just submit it on the phone, online. You don't have to have it. They have relationships with your bank. You just have to approve it. They crunch the numbers based on your income, your assets, your credit. They're going to analyze all the home loan options that are appropriate for which you qualify. You pick the term. You pick the rate. You know everything. The monthly payments, the annual percentage rate, all the details. It's completely transparent. Then you say yes or no, and then they say you're approved, and then you show that to the realtor. And baby, you got a new house. If you're refinancing, a good time to do it as interest rates ratchet up. Rocketmortgage.com/twig. They go there too. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Rocketmortgage.com/twig. And we thank them so much.
Ooh, can I put out a thank you?
Yes.
Not to Rocket Mortgage, although awesome, but to Scooter X, who posted an explanation for something that just started driving me nuts, which is Google Photos requiring you to say boom, delete before you can actually delete it, like to confirm a delete before you delete your photos.
You have to say boom?
You don't have to say boom. Sorry. when you delete your photo,
that would be weird.
Says, Stacey says are you boom. Sure you want
Whenever
to do this?
Whenever Stacey clicks, she says boom. We now know that.
Boom. I do. I'm very definitive and decisive in my clicking.
So before they didn't ask you to confirm it, they just deleted it?
No, they just let you undo it. But now, and
oh,
I am
that's
one
right.
of those
there
people.
There was an undo. Yeah.
I delete like my accounts. I am so OCD about it. I am like, go in and delete photos. So this is like driving me absolutely bonkers because I'm like, yes, I want to delete it. Stop asking me.
Well, but there's, it's not a big deal.
It is a big deal. It's an extra boom.
It's not that big a deal.
It's part of this like media manipulation. You're just making it that much more difficult for me to do the things to get my data and make it go away.
All right. Let me just show everybody and they can decide if it's a boom. So you're here in Google Photos. You say, you know, I don't really like that photo. You click. So I selected it, click the trash can, and then it says move to trash. It will be removed from all photos. folders, rather. So that's good to know. It's going to delete all and then move to trash. Boom. How hard is that? That
3 versus 2 clicks.
So I think it always did that. You're saying it would just press the trash can and would just throw it out?
It would just go. And then it would do a slider that says, ooh, would you like to undo this?
Well, if you still get the slider that you can undo it, which is nice.
Oh, God. That's even two. Anyway, I was irritated. Thank you, Scooter Experts.
In the past, so this is a Scooter link to an article from 9to5 Google. In the past, deleting an image on Google Photos would automatically send that picture to the trash. A snack bar, I didn't know that's what you called it, but that's what they do apparently, would slide up from the bottom of the display and offer users a chance to undo their action. However, it would disappear after a few seconds and could go unnoticed. So they're just trying to protect people from accidentally deleting their pictures.
You can undo it if you accidentally delete it. Now I've got to click an extra button, and I delete like 50 or 60 photos at a time. So that's 50 or 60 extra.
Oh, no, no, no,
you
no.
mean each photo? You can't.
No, just no, 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 no. It doesn't do that. It just does it once.
No, here. It does it on your additional.
Let me delete 6 photos, okay?
Oh, so I delete mine one at a time because I want to look at the photo before I delete it.
Well, Stacey, there is an easier way. You can select multiple photos just like that.
That's what I do when I delete all the receipts that I had to take, for my expensive account.
To save the time that they just used up, you know that it will now, in the assistant, pick up the receipts and say, would you like to free up some space? These don't seem to be anything you would want to keep. Did you see that?
Oh, I did not see that.
Isn't that nice?
Probably because I don't have... My photos are terrible. They're like me and my child, my dog, and then 8,000 photos of gadgets, and then a bunch of weird people from CES or whatever tech show I'm at. So Google's like...
I now get a classification that says these look like...
Diodes.
Like receipts. I don't think they do diodes. That would be pretty funny.
That would actually be a very useful classification.
You seem to have a lot of pictures of diodes. Maybe you'd like to delete some of those. Well, I haven't seen that one yet. I like Google Photos. I don't find that onerous.
Mm-hmm.
I like Google Photos. In fact, I just sold my friend on Google Photos. She's on an iPhone, and I was like, let me show you.
Everybody should be using an iPhone or Android. There's no reason not to use it. It's crazy if you don't use it. Did you see that Google is going to buy Snap for $30 billion?
Did that just happen?
No, that was last year.
No, this is last year.
You couldn't get it for $30 billion.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Sorry.
What's the market cap now?
I don't know. Let's see.
Okay, Google, what's the market cap of Snap?
Do you think he'll find it faster or me? The market cap is $15.9 billion. Whoops. Maybe they should have taken that $30 billion when they could have. 3 people inside and close to the company, according to Alex Heath of Business Insider, separately confirmed they heard the chatter that Google was going to buy or had floated an offer of $30 billion. They confirmed the price to, with one calling it an open secret among Snap's upper ranks in certain industry circles. So we'd heard this rumor last year, but this kind of confirms it. And so they got a valuation in May of $20 billion, and they're currently at $15 billion market cap because their stock's been hurting after the Instagram copy, right?
But in fairness, getting bought by Facebook versus getting bought by Google, you're going to end up with very different trajectories anyway.
I mean, it's $30 billion from Google.
Right. Sorry. But if you thought you could do a better job than Google at building a picture-centric social network, I bet a lot of people thought they could do a better job.
Yeah. Well, I think Google learned a lesson. In 2013...
Or Google's still trying.
We reported on a rumor 4 years ago that Google had offered $4 billion. And that Snap had turned them down and Zuckerberg. But
I believe it.
And $4 billion sounded like a lot. $30 billion. That's hard to turn down $30 billion. But, if you think the upside's bigger and they knew they were going to go public. And wow.
Yeah. All those kids' eyeballs ready to be manipulated.
That's exactly what it is.
Have we talked about the Essential phone getting crazy dollars and coming out? Have we talked about that?
Not really. I mean, I ordered one. I don't know. It was supposed to come out in June. This is Andy Rubin, the guy who created Android and was at Google behind Android until he got promoted to robotics and then left the company. What's the story? I mean, I'm waiting for
Let's see. What is
was
the
there,
story?
Was there a delivery date?
Yeah, well, he said...
The launch date is coming next week now. Oh. But I thought there was also some money.
He said at Recode that they were going to come out in 30 days. That was in June, so they didn't make
it. Oh, really? Oh,
so, I didn't $699... What is it? They've raised $300 million in funding.
$300 million. Right. So the
From
Wall Street Journal is reporting...
Amazon. Okay.
Yes, that's what it was. Yeah. I was like, there's a lot of dollars in my brain. And then they also
such
said
a bad
that it would
time to buy a phone right now, or buy a phone company for that matter. It's because everybody's waiting, and I think rightly so, to see what Apple does. And even if not Apple, we're going to have August 23rd, the Galaxy Note 8. Probably sometime in November, Google will announce its new Pixel phone. These are the big players. I think this is a bad.
Do you
think
Apple can do anything groundbreaking?
Yes. Believe it or not.
Oh, aren't they doing 3D image sensoring?
Yes.
Guys, you guys, when this happens, I am ready to talk about it because I learned all about 3D sensors. Sorry. I'm not sorry.
I don't think you were here last week when we talked about a very good article in Medium by an expert in augmented reality about why Apple is going to eat the world and why Google didn't. Google's Tango technology. Yeah, wasn't that good?
That was good.
Google's Tango technology and HoloLens from Microsoft both are very similar to Apple's technology. In some cases, in some senses, HoloLens is superior, but it won't be out till 2019. And Google was at a disadvantage because, unlike Apple, they don't control the hardware platform. Mm-hmm. And you need to do both hardware and software to make this work effectively, which is why Apple, when it releases an augmented reality phone, kind of like Tango, we've ordered the Zen phone. Jason Howell ordered the Zenfone AR. So that's a Tango phone, one of the first consumer-grade Tango phones. But I think Apple, just by virtue of 100 million phones, something like that, in the next 6 months, will be dominant. Actually, it's more than that because every phone since the 5S, once it has iOS 11, will be capable of augmented reality. But you'll want the extra hardware that the new phone comes with. Do you think, Stacey, AR is a gimmick like VR ended up being, or is
No, I think AR is really exciting and really useful, not just in consumer things where I think it might end up being a gimmick for a while. I think in industrial things, it already is being effectively used to increase productivity and make life a little easier for people. So I am very excited about AR.
I know in the form Apple's proposing, I'm not all that excited. You know, the idea that you hold up your phone and it's like Pokemon Go and you see stuff.
That's why I think industrial is going to be really...
Like Google Glass,
Well, it's the same way the personal computer we all looked at, the computer was a business machine first. And it had to be to get the economies of scale, the software written, to get all of this done costs a lot. So you needed a customer who could pay a lot. But the way electronics work... You then push that out to the consumer. So I think we're actually, with AR, going to need that business kind of economies of scale and impetus to help develop the right ecosystem. And then it'll come down to consumers and we'll start seeing better heads-up displays.
Maybe then this is perfect for you and me and Jeff. T-Mobile's new Jump on Demand lets you upgrade your phone every 30 days.
Oh, I would hate that.
Even I. That's kind of wasteful, shall we say.
You need to enter an 18-month lease agreement, after which you could pay off the rest of the cost of the device and trade it in or start over. But the original Jump on Demand was 3 device upgrades a year, which seemed like an awful lot. They don't say what devices are included, but according to a Reddit thread, S8, S8 Plus, G6, Moto Z2 Force are all available through the program.
Do people not have a lot of things on Authenticator and other apps that, I mean, geez.
Well, I will vouch for this because I am always, you know, trying different phones. It's not, if you know what you're doing, it's very easy to set up a phone in such a way that, you know, in an hour or two overnight, your new phone can duplicate. Well, I don't have to spend that time, but I mean, you copy over very quickly, and you use like Authy, which is a account based authenticator, so it has all of your authentication. It's not so hard to do.
That's the biggest complaint. How do I move my authenticator stuff all over without having to
start using Authy, A-U-T-H-Y.
Okay.
Which is exactly the same as Google Authenticator, with one exception. You have an account, and it stores your authentication information in an encrypted fashion on their servers. They can't see it. Only you can see it. It's trust no one encryption. But that means when you set up a new phone, you put Authy on it. You can have it download all of your authentications, and then you unencrypt them, and you're good to go. And that's what I do now. It's
okay. That could save me time.
Oh, it's huge.
Because that's the biggest thing when I'm like.
So I do that. I save my desktop layout, which is also a complex, you know, a lot of widgets and stuff. But I use Action Launcher, but Nova Launcher. A lot of launchers will do this. Will let you save your layout not just to the phone, but I save it to Google Drive. So when I get a new phone, you log into your Google account. You say download all my apps. It downloads all your apps. Then I download the layout, and that's immediately applied. And I'm pretty much good to go. The only thing that takes time is logging into my accounts, because your passwords aren't preserved for good reason. But if you use LastPass or some sort of password manager that fills in the logins, it's pretty quick to get everything up to speed. I can get a phone up to speed pretty quick. What takes the longest time is downloading all the stuff. So I do that when I'm sleeping.
But at least you don't have to do it anymore.
It's much easier.
It is. It works well.
Yeah, and you could do that with an iPhone by backing up the iPhone and restoring it. So, you're all going to want an iPhone. I'm telling you, the more I think about it, the more this new iPhone is going to be a game changer. Oh, you want to know why I think that?
Yes, I do.
Number one, camera. Not just for augmented reality. I think that's going to be interesting, but not something you're going to have, right? That's going to be kind of, you know, interesting. But the camera itself, I think the computational photography it's going to be capable of, partly because of these new sensors it needs for AR, is going to be a truly remarkable camera, I'm hoping. We've seen already evidence.
Vic Condotra is just going to die.
Yeah, Vic. But we have also seen other evidence that the camera is going to have some interesting new capabilities. Mm-hmm. For instance, we talked about this on MacBreak Weekly yesterday. It's going to store, it's going to use a new format, the high-efficiency format instead of JPEG. JPEG, as you probably know, when you take a picture, it makes decisions about what that picture should, how it should be rendered, and then it's done. It's fixed. The new high-efficiency format stores all the raw data, all the focal length, focal plane data, stores much more data about that image in this image, so that you can kind of change focal points. You can do all sorts of stuff with this image that you can't do with a JPEG. That's going to be huge. This is ISO standard, but it's going to be the first phone to implement it. And the camera, you know, boffins on MacBreak Wheeler are very excited about it. HEIF, high efficiency image file format. That's one. Camera, very exciting. Two, the screen is going to be OLED. Now, that's catch-up for a lot of other phones, but I think it will be as good as the Samsung Galaxy S8, which is a very, very good screen. Edge-to-edge display. I think the end of the bezels is good. And I'm very interested in how it appears that they're going to get rid of the fingerprint reader and just go with face recognition. And knowing Apple, it won't be like the face recognition that we currently get on, say, the S8, which is a little slow and cumbersome. You have to position yourself and so forth. I will be shocked if it doesn't, and maybe it won't, but my prediction is it'll work even if the phone's lying flat. So it'll be able to see at all angles. And again, this, I think, comes down to better camera technology, partly to support AR. And so it will just unlock. In your presence, it will unlock. And you don't like it?
I'm wondering if that's actually true. In your presence, that feels
but as soon as you are close enough to use it, it will unlock.
So I think, and I don't know this for sure, but Qualcomm's got a sensor that is very power efficient, that is it can recognize, hey, this is a face. It cannot do the type of intense facial recognition, high quality facial recognition you need for security purposes. But What I think they're going to do is implement that sensor, since Qualcomm told me a major phone manufacturer was going to use it. They're going to have a sensor like that that says, oh my God, it's a face nearby. And then they're going to wake up the battery sucking 3D sensing technology.
Yes.
But it's not going to be, your phone's still going to have to be able to see enough of your face to get the angles that it needs.
Well,
to shoot the light, to get the angles that it
needs.
If
that's the case, it's going to be a problem.
3D sensing.
Because right now, Apple, and same with the Pixel, the unlocking is so straightforward and transparent and instant that it's not a burden. But I could tell you the face recognition I've used on every other camera is burdensome. You have to do this.
Well, this will be faster because that tiny face recognition thing, as you're picking up the phone, it's going to be like, psst.
Yeah.
And it won't be. So that one would be spoofed by a copy. But the 3D sensors are not spoofed by a copy because what they're measuring isn't your actual face. It's the depth. Well, someone in the chat was saying that. So
I'm just saying that from a marketing point of view, if you have to do this every time you want to unlock your phone, I'm holding it up in front of my face, that's going to end up being a non-starter. And
you're going to have to look down at it.
Yeah, well, it'd be interesting to see. I can imagine a camera that has enough wide enough angle that it can pick up your face. Look, you know, if you use my Sony camera and you say lock on faces, you can move. It actually does lock on eye. You can move around in all sorts of configuration, and that focus lock stays right on you. It does not lose focus.
Okay.
So I don't think that that's impossible. Well, their Apple implemented is unknown. I don't have any inside information on that.
No one does, except Gene Munster.
I did get sent, I guess I can show this. I did get sent a dummy, I think it was a dummy of the phone by a well-known, let me make it big so you can't see the name, leaker. He says this is a dummy of what the actual new iPhone will look like. That is a lightning connector. No headphone jack. But the most interesting thing on this was the camera, which is stacked instead of side-by-side sensors. The camera lens, let's see if I can get it in a good position, is stacked on the, see, it's vertical, not horizontal. And it could be a complete bogus fake. You never know. Another thing T-Mobile did, you're going to like this, Jeff. I like it. We get a discount if we're over 55.
Wait, what?
Ageism.
We get $10 off the everything plan if we're over 55.
That's because we won't be switching T-Mobile? Very long because we're old.
Well, and because you're not probably using a lot of data because you're not watching those darn YouTube videos on the cellular network.
Those kids with their internets. It's unlimited 55 plus two lines for $60 a month. Actually, that's a bigger discount than I thought. So the next time you say, hey, you're old, I'm going to say, yeah, but I get T-Mobile for $60.
Please, if I try to be a surfer dude.
Look at this guy.
Just shoot me.
Andy Warhol surfing. So I have to call him and say, hey, can I get this deal? Because that would save me a lot of money. John Ledger is 59. He says, well, no. But you know what it really is, I think, is that T-Mobile does not do well with people of a certain age. That's kind of a kid's, because of the Magenta and everything. It's kind of a kid's network, and they want to get...
I thought it was because it wasn't reliable, and kids can pay for cheap, unreliable service, but adults...
I beg your pardon. T-Mobile is fantastic.
T-Mobile does not work where I live.
Well, that's because you live in Texas.
Yeah, well...
So does a lot of other people.
That's your defense?
That's the problem. No. It's too many people using the phones. There weren't so many people using the phones.
No, you're right.
T-Mobile
really is dependent. It's very much dependent on where you live. I use actually Google Fi on this phone, and that's nice because I get Sprint, T-Mobile, U.S. Cellular, all of that.
What happens when they become the same?
So another data point confirming my contention that Mark Zuckerberg wants to be president of this here United States. He has hired, wait a minute, this isn't the article. He has hired Hillary Clinton's, they say pollster, but he was also chairman of her campaign.
Yeah, I also know him.
Yeah?
He also advises lots of corporations. His company is more than politics. He advises corporations on strategy.
We're talking about Joel Benenson, a Democratic pollster.
Joel's a former reporter at the Daily News where I knew him.
Oh, I didn't know that. Top advisor to Obama, chief strategist during... Okay, actually, that's not really a good thing on your resume. Chief strategist for Hillary Clinton's campaign. Maybe that's a mark against you. I don't know. But,
well, you didn't have a lot of control of Comey, but we won't go there.
All right.
He advises lots of corporations, and he's advising the foundation.
I think that's a smoke screen.
My favorite tweet of the week besides mansplaining, manspreading was when somebody just said, so Zuckerberg's not running for president after all, above a link to automatic sound coming on Facebook.
Oh, that's driving me crazy. I woke Lisa up last night. It's like all this noise is coming out of my phone. I said, I can't stop it. It's Facebook. That is the most annoying. Why did they do that?
Wait, what is it that they're doing?
Well, you know, they play video automatically. They just turn on audio.
Okay. Yes.
So you're scrolling through your Facebook at night because you can't sleep. And all of a sudden a video comes on and so does blaring noise.
Yep.
Got it. Yeah, that's not popular. This is why I don't surf Facebook at night.
Probably a good idea.
Stacey doesn't watch television. She doesn't surf Facebook at night.
I do watch television. I just don't.
She's perfect. We're just scummy men.
I meditate and do yoga.
Shush. You have your green tea.
Oh, I hate green tea. That's terrible.
Oh, God.
So there you go. And I'm not a vegan.
Instagram.
No, you're most certainly not.
You live in Austin. Capital of barbecue.
Against the law there.
We do have a lot of vegans in Austin, surprisingly.
Oh, I'm not surprised. So,
me either.
There's vegans everywhere.
They're miserable. They're even more miserable because they can smell the barbecue.
You know, for a while, we were actually, our city council was looking at doing, I guess it's a law or rule, an ordinance about barbecue places had to install scrubbers because the smell was bothering some people, which I thought was absolutely hilarious.
I did go with a friend who's Hindu some years ago, South by Southwest, and we're trying to find, of course, always someplace to eat Western across. We walk into Fogo de Chao, which is a Brazilian.
Meat on
they
swords.
They just bring meat and meat and more meat. And he just said, the smell alone, he said, I just can't do it. I don't blame him.
No. Yeah. There's a lot of good places that have lovely vegetarian food, but that is not one of them. They have a salad bar.
Instagram has now, and I think we should do this, Jeff. I should Instagram go live, and then you could join me. We could have a two-person Instagram live thing. I'm not, this must be.
Are we already friends?
This is another, no, I'm not your friend.
Why didn't you invite me to do this? Huh?
Well, I would, except you probably think I was hitting on you or something.
Oh, that was low and uncalled for, Leo.
All right, you're right. I don't actually know how to do it. How do we do it? How do you go live? Do you...
Are you Mr. Laporte?
Yes, Mr. _ Laporte.
So I got to follow you.
That turned on.
I'm following.
How do you go live? Oh, that turned on the flash.
I'm like, whoa, we don't know how to do this.
the phone is speaking to me now. Well, that's not it, obviously. Camera. Okay, tap for photos. One of these obscure buttons must be live, right? Oh, well, there it is. I just swipe. I swipe. Start live video. Okay, I'm live on Instagram.
Where do I go?
Just go to the camera, and it's on the left. It's just not. It's not immediately obvious. There's some text. I'm now live. Okay. Now, how do we add somebody? That's the thing.
Start live video. Okay, I'm live too.
Okay, we're telling your followers that you started a live video. Turn off commenting. No.
So nobody's actually watching this.
God,
people, but
I've got like all these people are watching me all of a sudden.
So how do I join
Leo? Experiment on this week in Google. Now, how do I? They said they're rolling it out. I mean, let me look at the article. I don't have the double friend icon. You need a double friend icon in there. Do you have a?
I don't either.
The problem.
So this is the most boring.
Hey, Chris. Hey, Rusty.
People.
Hey, Ryan.
I'm on Twig right now with Leo Laporte. We were trying to do a joint video.
Do you have this thing? Cool. Do you have the little two head?
visit there. Show
two-head
it to me.
Thing like
no,
that?
No, I don't have that.
I don't have that old. Either, so we can't do...
I'm too old.
Yeah.
Can we call this show Two Old Guys on Instagram?
Wallace and...
That was mean. You know what? You know what? You know what, Stacey? You're an ageist. That's what
I
you
am an ageist on this one, man.
What do I do now? There's all these people watching me. I have 130 people
thing.
Watching
Hi,
me.
Hi, guys. I'm actually not doing anything interesting. I'm just on a podcast. You can go to twit.tv/twig
and watch and what we're doing.
Real show
for reels. Here, yeah. I'll show them that. Look at that. 145 people. Hi from Australia, Tennessee, from London, Ireland, calling. Well, this is fun. I should do this more, except what would you want to... I mean, I do
well,
this
we
all
did
day.
This. Didn't we do this on
you
Facebook
do short
live?
Little snippets in oh, that location.
This is supposed to be a short little snippet. So we're just trying to
I'm
see how to turn on... Now Instagram has this capability of... I'll flip my camera around so you
Twit.
Can see
TV.
It. So it has this
Twit.
Capability...
live.
of doing two people, but I don't have that. I don't have that icon.
We just wasted everybody's time. That's what we do on the show is waste people's time.
San Diego, Burbank, Caroline
Sydney.
County.
I just got hello from Sydney. Zeitgeist.
Aja Minam is in Chicago. Where's the best
Ionic
pizza in Chicago?
Says, hi, Stacey.
Okay. It's the first
Stacey. Hi, said Stacey. Stacey said hi.
Oh, David says, make America great again. Right on. Who couldn't agree with that? St. Louis, Chi-Town. Oh, you download the icon? It says download the icon.
Download the icon? How do you download the icon?
I don't know. Somebody in the Instagram says you can download the icon. To start, okay, go live. Toggle over from normal. Okay. Then tap the new faces icon that appears in the bottom right. See, I don't have
it. We don't have the new faces icon. Yeah.
So we haven't got it yet. All right, I'm going to have to stop.
All right, bye.
Was that the stupidest thing you've ever
Stacey
participated
was
in?
Stacey was completely appalled.
I did not participate. I want it known that...
Let's let on the record. You were jealous that he asked me, and
I
then now you're
at
mocking
first jealous.
Me.
At first.
You're right. You're right.
At first
I was
jealous.
Like,
now you should be
I
grateful.
Wasn't jealous.
Yes,
I
you
was
were.
Just like, why,
yes, you
no,
were.
Why didn't he invite
it's
me?
It's my fault. I didn't update my Instagram. I'm updating it now.
Oh. This is what Kevin and I do. We just do it before the show.
I was going to ask you.
We investigate all kinds of things, but we don't do it live on the air because we're not as comfortable.
You're
as
professionals
you guys are.
And we're amateurs.
True. Really.
No. Oh, that's right. Jeff, you're not a journalist.
Yeah, I'm not a journalist.
Not a journalist.
That was the first thing you said, Stacey.
All right. I'm starting the live. Start live video.
Did you get it?
I've updated it. Well, let's see. I'm checking to see. Nope, still not there.
So
it's one of those things where they're rolling it out staged, probably.
You know, I wonder sometimes if we're not on the do not update list.
Maybe. They said they're adding it today, so, I mean, you know. All right, what else? Is there anything else? Multi-room audio to Echo speakers. That's going to be the nail in the coffin for Sonos.
Man. Yes, because I've been waiting for my...
Me too.
I complained about this morning on my podcast.
Well,
so
I feel like I've wasted a lot of money on Sonos now because Amazon is reportedly going to add the exact capability that Sonos has that makes Sonos unique, the multi-room audio. And if you have dots, you can have better speakers. You can have them in every room. This is awesome. You'll be able to put your Alexa speakers into groups. So you don't have to just do party mode. You can send it to individual groups. I have so many dots lying around the house. Amazon, did you see all the secret brands? This is actually, we're going to do a public service announcement here.
Ooh, that was interesting.
Amazon has been busy trademarking brands. Quartz, by the way, very good, I think, reporting. Mike Murphy at Quartz.
Quartz is great. Quartz is wonderful.
He trawled through the U.S. Patent and Trademark database to find 19 brands owned by Amazon. So he must have cross-referenced it. So if you buy Arabella lingerie.
Happy Belly?
Happy Belly, that's food. You're buying it direct from Amazon, just under. It's not a separate seller.
It's a house brand.
It's a house brand. Yeah. Beauty bar. Because I've bought Pins on Sheets. They've had those for some time. And they even say Pins on by Amazon. So you know you're getting Amazon Sheets. I don't buy them anymore because they weren't very good. Beauty Bar, Denali, Franklin and Freeman, Happy Belly, James and Aaron Women's Clothing, Lark and Row Women's Clothing, May Underwear, Mama Bear Baby Products, My Habit Consumer Goods, North 11, New Pro, Pike Street, Pinzon, Scout and Row for Kids Clothing. That's funny. Lark and Row Women's Clothing and Scout and Row Kids Clothing. Single Cow Burger. That's
a weird brand.
It's not really an appetizing brand. Small Parts, Smart is Beautiful, and Strathwood. I've seen Strathwood. There are other trademarks that Amazon owns, but don't currently have products, but I presume the plan is to do so. Bloom Street, Concrete New York, which is for leather goods. Familyhood. I know what you're thinking, Jeff. Knock it off. Find GT Prime, Instant Pretty, RV Me. You could buy motorhomes on Amazon.
Oh, my.
Single, frozen food for sad, lonely single people.
I like the idea that the UPS guy has to deliver your RV to your house.
Skate Creek and Sweaterman.
It'll be the Amazon guy. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Good Threads, The Fix, Coastal Blue, Ella Moon, Ocean Blues, Paris Sunday, Preston. Do you think there's like a whole department coming up with names? And that there's
these are consultants. I've gone through this with companies.
And I feel like there's a lot of thinking that goes into why you would, for instance, name a cleaning product Presto with an exclamation.
Landor Associates is in San Francisco.
Yeah,
you know
Landor, yeah.
Yeah, Walter Landor.
Yeah.
And you pay them a fortune to come up with names.
It's very expensive. So they are house brands, and there's quite a few of them. Why do you think they do that? What's the goal there?
Because you could have a much higher margin.
Yeah, the higher margin. Consumers will buy it. Amazon brand stuff is, quote, basic at the moment.
Right.
So you can make a brand look better.
Yeah.
You can also, if someone hates Amazon, I don't know why they'd be shopping on there, but, you know.
Quartz asked quote, direct economy expert, Mark DeMassimo. He's at a New York-based advertising agency. He said, there's a logic to this. The Amazon brand name can only stretch so far. Quote, can you imagine anyone ever saying, oh, Lord, this Amazon personal lubricant is just so sexy? There are limits to the Amazon brand that Amazon would be wise not to cross. That makes sense. That actually makes a lot of sense.
My dear departed father-in-law got a suit one day. He was very proud of the suit. And it was pricey. It was great price. And he got it from Macy's. He said, look, it's an Alfani. I never had the heart to tell him that was the Macy's house brand.
I know.
But it worked, right?
I know. It sounds Italian. Nice Italian suit. It's not funny.
So I ran a recent – we brought in the top people in commerce in media, like Gizmodo and Perch and other places for a community of practice that I organized at CUNY. We organized at our center. And what was fascinating about it was that the consumer behavior now – so these are media companies that put up commerce. They want to sell, you know, most anything to you. And they start with Amazon links, but then they want to go off and make their own deals, better deals, right? Because Amazon affiliate money gets worse and it's not that great. Consumer behavior is they want to buy at Amazon. If you're doing commerce, you are stuck with Amazon the way that the rest of us in advertising are stuck with – Google, the way the rest of the world in social is stuck with Facebook.
Yep. This is the future. We're going to be owned by just a few big, giant multinationals.
And it's fine with me.
I'm
perfectly
ready.
Okay with it. I love the change. I have no...
Embrace it, Jeff.
The past.
Embrace it.
I am embracing it. I, for one, admire our new masters.
Yes.
I am fine with the disruption. The disruption is good.
Keep saying that. Is that your this is our mantra. Disruption is good.
Disruption is good.
I'll have some green tea now.
I'm not ashamed to be two old men try to go on Instagram. It's okay. I embrace the change. I want to get ahead of the change.
You sound like Stuart Smalley now.
I'm like, embrace the disruption.
Yes.
Let's embrace the end of this show. We've gassed on quite long enough. Stacey, you got a pick of any kind for us?
I do. Today's pick is the Be Mighty Player.
Oh, I know this. This is weird.
Yes. It's not weird. It's awesome.
Okay.
this is something I've been wanting, which is basically an iPod shuffle for Spotify.
I didn't understand what this was. I'm sorry. I thought it was a speaker.
Nope. Okay. Not a speaker. So this, it works with.
Yep.
wired or wireless headsets. And basically, I was looking for a way to have Spotify on my when I walk the dog in the morning or when I run without having to carry my phone with me because I hate carrying my phone.
Yeah, and I don't have an Apple Watch. The Nano, so there's a real opportunity here.
So, and yeah, plus the Nano, you know, you had to like load it into iTunes, and iTunes is awful.
Right.
So
does
this,
it download the music?
It downloads, you select playlists on Spotify, and you have to have a Spotify account to use this. It's $95, and it loads it over Wi-Fi in your house, and then basically you click this button here at the top, and you go skip through your playlists. So if you want to listen to like a specific album, you're going to have to make a playlist for that album to
because
put it onto
this.
Because
there's no display.
Right. There's no display. So it's not, you know, it may be a little clunky, but it's not random. You can actually get to songs you want if you just click this
See,
little
this
button
is interesting.
There.
Apple discontinued the Shuffle because they figured people wanted Spotify. And I think Apple's play is, well, just do it on your watch. You'll be able to stream Spotify on your watch. This is maybe what Apple should have done with the Nano. This is very smart.
I thought this, I mean, because like I'm already in Spotify and I don't want to carry my phone. So the fact that Spotify I had been looking at this for a long time.
Do you have to have premium? Spotify premium?
You do have to have the paid version.
So
you don't have to
download.
Have the family plan.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then every 30 days you're gonna have to click it. To your account, you'll have to open, you know, Pabum Connect to your phone and be like, I'm still legit on Spotify.
I love it. BeMighty.com. And of course, nowadays, we don't really ask about the sound quality or anything like that. It's good enough.
It's good enough for running. I mean, and it's five hours of playback. The one gripe I have is the clip on the back.
Yeah.
Hello, clip.
Hello,
it's clip. I want a smaller clip. It feels a little clunky, but that's okay. Ta-da.
I'm telling you, Apple should have done this for Apple Music. That's what I wonder if they'd even considered that. Interesting. Jeff Jarvis, a number from you, my friend.
So this will probably peeve you. That's why I'm doing it.
Okay.
There is a Now Hear This is a 3-day podcast festival at the Javits Center in New York.
It's going to be all NPR podcasts.
All that kind of,
and
yes.
And Gimlet.
That's all that, right? Right. Plus the political ones. So I already bought my ticket 3 days. I bought the regular ticket at $170 for, I think it's $330. You have the VIP ticket for 3 days.
Wow.
You get, you know, in front. And you get
so people
and
are going,
that.
Wait a minute. People are spending that much money to watch podcasts be made?
Yeah, Leo, there's a lesson in this for you.
Yeah, no kidding.
But.
I think my husband's going to that.
Oh, my God.
You sure is?
You should say hi. Uh-huh.
Comedy Bang Bang. How Did This Get Made? LeVar Burton Reads. Lore, Criminal, Black on the Air. That's Larry Wilmore's podcasts. Interest. Planet Money will be there.
Hello from the Magic Tavern. I would totally try that out.
Wow, this is...
Yes, I'm going.
This is kind of amazing.
Immediately.
This is like back-to-back-to-back-to-back podcasts. A lot of comics, of course. John Lovett, Lauren Lapkus.
You know, I loved it when you did live audiences in places. I think it's great.
Yeah, we did this years ago.
I think you could do a Twit Festival or a tech podcast festival on the West Coast.
Yeah. Early on, we did that all the time, and we stopped doing it. I mean, it just got, I don't know. But people
it's a big
it.
Hassle.
We just say people come to our place if you want, and you can watch live.
Or what you can do, too.
No
is
charge.
You can do also on the rundown. You can instead, you could do the podcast from the New York subway, manspreading the whole time.
I so want to Gotham do a new show, this. The manspread mansplaining show.
This is pretty cool. This is pretty darn cool. If you go down, I think, let me scroll.
Wait a minute, this is real?
This is real. Scroll down. There's like 5 or 6 episodes. Scroll down. That one. So watch the opener of that one. No, I'm sorry, next one. Episode 4. Yeah, episode 4. You're right. No, you were right. You were right. Episode 4.
He does it from the subway?
Yeah, get a load of this. This is so cool.
He's bringing a box.
He's bringing a desk. A desk.
It's his desk. Okay, so he's... Imagine, kind of a hipster Jimmy Fallon with his own desk coming into the subway station. And he's going to set it up in the...
Hey, I almost died. Hey, guys, I'm Dean Dimitrick. This is the late night talk show on the subway.
So he's sitting there on the desk, two coffee cups, just sitting on the subway.
I don't know who they are, where they're going, but we're about to meet them. How's everyone doing? The guest is going to come through
New York.
This door.
This is the premise that everybody has something interesting to say.
What's your name?
Ty.
Ty, sit right here, buddy.
Sit right here.
This reminds me of that Stoop show in Brooklyn.
Hi, wow.
Hello.
What is your name?
Lara.
Here, sit down, okay. Lara. Ty. Are you Snapchat? First and foremost, who are you wearing? What do you got?
These are Nike.
I am wearing some Michael Kors with some Jalen Berg. This is Club
Did you
Monaco.
Coordinate the umbrella with the outfit?
You know, actually that's the most important part.
Do you have more than one umbrella?
You know what? I'm a man of one umbrella.
What about the umbrella?
You know, that's Walmart.
So this is Derail. This is Jeremy. Say hi to Jeremy.
Hey. Jeremy, what's going on?
How's he his band? Oh, yeah,
he's got bongos.
I'm going to get this Jenga stack right here. We have questions on it, okay?
So would you watch this more
First
than once?
Question.
No, but I love
Who
it.
Who is the person you hated most in middle school?
I bet my kid would watch
Think
this.
About it.
A girl named Margaret.
Margaret?
Yeah.
Why?
Because she was so mean to me.
How was she mean to you? What did she
do? She used to make fun of the way I dressed.
Did
because
you?
Because I used to wear Walmart.
Right? Oh,
so they've obviously mic'd this person. So
and it's cool.
They
Oh yeah, they picked her on their platform and they knew. Yeah, oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. Okay. You've seen enough.
All right. All right. Yeah.
I think this is highly funny and entertaining.
It is. I mean, again, I would watch it a little bit, like we just did. Months, maybe.
But I don't think that kids, I mean,
I love
your
creativity.
No, like,
I'm not knocking it at
yeah.
all. Well,
I don't think people come
should
back
do it
for
on the ferry.
Something.
I've used up all my creativity. I'm just
going to
say,
going
here.
To Marin.
I'm going, yeah.
Enough disruption, enough change.
Youngsters show Leo how to Instagram on the next Fairy Talk. Hey, kid, how do you do this? Come here. That'd be fun. I could play an old guy. Doesn't know what the hell's going on.
The Bart cast.
Oh, wait a minute. We already do that. Okay. I hope you all had a great time on Twig. I know I did. Thank you so much to Stacey Higginbotham for being here. Stacey on IOT.com. That's her blog, her newsletter, really. And IOTpodcast.com, the great podcast she does with Kevin Toefel. Ironically, every Wednesday. So do you have anything to do the rest of the week?
Yeah. Eat bonbons all day.
That's it. And yoga.
And yoga.
Like those girls do, yeah. Yes.
As girls will. Thank you, Stacey, for putting up with us. We appreciate it. Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Stacey.
Jeff Jarvis, he's the professor of journalism at the City University of New York, the grad school
so
there.
Runned up the field here in Chicago.
He's out there meeting his colleagues in the Windy City, also at buzzmachine.com. That's his blog, at Jeff Jarvis on the Twitter. She's at Stacey Higginbotham on the Twitter. I am Leo Laporte. We do this show every Wednesday.
I am not at Stacey Higginbotham on the Twitter.
Oh, you're Giga Stacey. Sorry.
That's okay.
Do you have Stacey Higginbotham?
Maybe.
That's probably too many words for the Twitter.
That's why I didn't do it.
Yeah. Too many letters. At Giga Stacey, of course. I'm sorry, Stacey. I know better than that. We do the show. I'm just tired. We do the show every Wednesday. I was up all night on the phone watching Instagram. We do this show every Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. If you will tune in live, you will watch this show with amazement and chat with our chatters at irc.twit.tv, and your entertainment quotient will go through the roof. However, you don't have to be here to enjoy the show because we make on-demand audio and video available. After the fact, every single show we do at twit.tv, in this case, twit.tv/TWIG for this week in Google. You can also, you know, whatever you particular little device you use to listen to podcasts, just search for Twig and get it. Subscribe. That way, every Thursday, you will have in your podcaster in the morning a great
hours,
show to listen to.
Hours of entertainment. And joy.
Hours of
many,
cranky guys.
Many, many hours.
Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.